Councilmember Cardoza?
Here.
Councilmember Christensen?
Here.
Council President Buben van der Haar?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Here.
Mayor Steer?
Here. And we have Russell George from, well, it used to be the Life Church. I guess you can tell us the new name. If you'll rise for the Benedict, or the,
let's take a minute and pray. We changed the name of the church to now change Life Church. That's where I'm from. Father, we just ask for your blessing on these men and women who have set apart their time and their talent to oversee the administration of the blessing and the prosperity that you put on this city. And God, we just thank you for that. We pray, Lord, your presence would give them unity of mind and wisdom. And, Lord, that this meeting would be very orderly and swift. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you, Russell. And if you join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. The first item we have up is the consent agenda. Any questions or comments or motions?
If nothing, I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council, please?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Buben van der Haar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Thank you. Next, we have community reports. We have the introduction of Sergeant Mike Fratusco from our CUNA Police Chief, John McDaniel. Come on up, guys. Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. So I follow my sword a little bit, and public hearing, we had Zach Walls come. I told you that he's taking the place of Tommy Briggs, and I misspoke. He was actually taking the place of Carl Olson, who's going to be at the next meeting for just a little send-off. And so I also should have had Mike in here about 8 months ago when he first came to CUNA. And so Mike is our other supervisor that, again, took Tommy Briggs' spot. So I want to just formally give you a chance to he's going to say a few words about his experience, and then if you have any questions, please ask him.
Mr. Mayor, City Council, department heads, and citizens, I appreciate you giving me the time to just give a little backstory of who I am. My name is Mike Fratusco. I've worked at the Sheriff's Office for 16 years. I grew up in the Valley, graduated from Capitol High School, attended Fairmont Junior High, Cole Elementary, joined the military right out of high school, and then after the military, I was hired on with the Sheriff's Office. I have worked as a juvenile school resource officer, juvenile school resource officer sergeant, street crimes unit, supervisor attached to the U.S. Marshals, North County, South County, and I worked for Chief McDaniel for numerous years in the contract city of Eagle. When Chief McDaniel took over as chief out here in CUNA, he told me there was going to be an opening, and I asked to come out here. I've been trying to come out here since Chief DeSoe was here. So I've been trying to come out to CUNA for quite a long time, actually. I have a real soft spot for kids out in the community. Since I've been working here, I have spent a lot of time at the skate park, working with a lot of the kids there, trying to not clean up the skate park, but maybe be a role model and get my team to be role models to a lot of those kids that probably need maybe some guidance or a role model to look up to. It's very important to me with the kids in the community that they are our future, and if we can reach them early on, then we won't have to deal with them in a negative way later on. I appreciate your time. I hope to be out here for quite a while. I actually hope to retire out of this community. This should be my last area that I work prior to retirement, and I have probably about 7 years. So I look forward to staying out here as long as everything goes well. And someday when the chief retires, I hope that I can earn your trust and maybe be able to take that next step and forward my career. Thank you.
Very good. Very good.
Any questions?
Yeah, are you going to be able to keep him in line? Like,
I worked for him for quite a while.
Okay.
So he's,
all right.
I should be able to.
You know, Mike's being real humble. He's done a lot for the culture down at the skate park, and I'm very, very invested. Sometimes 2 or 3 times a day, he'll be down there with some of the teens. There's a couple different teens that he's been working with that, everything from attending their, getting them involved in sports, attending their sports games, even talking about, you know, the future as far as whether that's the military or whatever route they're going to go, college, really trying to, you know, he has a just a heart for kind of knowing when these kids are kind of at that why in their life and can go either direction. So really glad to have Mike, and he's a great role model for the other deputies as well. So.
Good.
And I would agree. Some of the stories I've heard already, he's kind of a one-man big brother program all his own. He's very much appreciated, and we certainly do appreciate what you do here. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, we'll jump right into public hearings here. So we have a public hearing and consideration to approve case number 18-02-V, a variance for J. Scott Dowdy. Troy, did you want to present before I left? He's getting our sign-in sheets. So the applicant, J. Scott Dowdy, requests approval of this variance request in order to reduce the setback requirements for accessory buildings from public rights-of-way on the street side of a corner lot. The site address is 2534 North Countryside Avenue, Kuna, Idaho, within Galliano Estate Subdivision, Walnut Creek, on Lot 19, Block 1, with Section 14 T2NR1W. Troy, did you want to present or have the applicant?
Members of the council, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Scott Dowdy. My wife and I are here tonight to request a variance from the setback, as indicated, for building an accessory building. I'm assuming you all have the packet and looked through it. I just wanted to kind of give a little bit of a brief history or background here on the situation and why we're where we're at. And when I first purchased this lot back in 2010, I was told by the developer that, the lot was a rectangle, and I knew that, and there was this little triangular piece that you can see there by looking at the actual on the ground. The plat does not agree with actually what it takes place and how the road works there and the road turns. Apparently that was changed by the developer after final plat approval by the city, and no one knew that he made that change, either from ACHD or from the city. And so when I bought the property, he told me that that little triangular chunk there was actually belonged to the homeowners association as a common lot, and he would include it in the price of my lot, and that I could later go to the city and get a lot land adjustment done and incorporate that into my property. So at the time, I had planned to build an accessory building out in the area of the location where I have it here on this drawing. And when I contacted the city, probably sometime around 2010-2011 time frame, about doing a lot line adjustment, you know, I was told, you're crazy, there's no line to adjust, you're right up against the road. And I said, well, actually I'm not, the road curves. And so the city came out and looked at it, and that's how they found out that the situation that was created here by the developer when he changed the road without prior approvals. So I contacted the developer again in regards to this, and he told me that, he had done that and that he was going to contact ACHD because he couldn't give me the property because he didn't own it. He'd already donated it to ACHD. He told me he was going to contact them, get it squared away so that I could incorporate that into my property. Several months went by. I didn't hear back from him, so I called him, and he told me, I talked to ACHD. They said they're not interested in selling the property, so you're out of luck. So, I took his word for it and just kind of dropped it. Several years later, I decided, as we got to the point where we thought we wanted to go ahead and put an accessory building out there, I contacted ACHD to find out why they didn't want to sell it or whether or not they had changed their minds. And they said, oh, we don't know what you're talking about. We remember when this guy called us and talked to us, and we told him exactly what he had to do to do that. And he said, okay. And then he just turned around and told me, oh, they didn't want to sell it because he didn't want to go through the process and pay the money. So at that point, I started talking to ACHD about what it would take for me to be able to acquire that piece of property. Obviously, knowing that it was public property, I was going to have to go through a process and a hearing and pay for it. So I talked to him about it a little bit. I didn't get very far because we weren't ready to build. So a little bit earlier this year, we got to the point where we're ready to go ahead and put the building there. So I contacted ACHD again, and all said and done, in order to acquire this little piece of property, which is roughly about 800 square feet, it's going to cost somewhere between $7,000 and $8,000 for me to do that, because of an application fee, and I have to get it surveyed and a legal description, and I have to get an appraisal, and I have to pay Idaho Power some money to make sure that I wasn't affecting their right of way along the backside of the property. And so I just decided, well, I had resolved myself to the point that I was going to go ahead and look at that option anyway, even though it was going to increase the cost of my building by $7,000 to $8,000. And then when I came in and talked to the city, realized that there's this 10-foot irrigation easement that's in between ACHD property and on my property, right on the line. And looking at that, I realized that I couldn't build the building any closer. Even if I purchased the plot from ACHD, I couldn't build it any closer than what I'm asking the council to allow me to do now at this point in time. And so I'd actually be able to put the building in the same exact spot, but it cost me $8,000 more to do it. So we decided that we would attempt to contact the city and go through this process and see if we couldn't get the variance to be able to do what we want to do. As I look at this, I think if you look at this particular exhibit, there's not a number on it or anything. I don't know which one it is in your packet, but I kind of drew this out here, and I took measurements here of how wide this property is here. And from the location where the garage would sit, the nearest my garage would be to the public sidewalk would be the 15 feet of the ACHD parcel plus the 10 feet of the irrigation easement, so it would be 25 feet would be the closest that we'd be. And on the back side, it would be for roughly 34 feet from the sidewalk. I want to build a garage here in a parallel to the road so that I can use my existing driveway and just expand that a little bit to be able to access the building, so I'm not looking for additional street access in this location at all. I won't be doing anything with that. I don't think that there's any point in the future that ACHD is going to move or change where the sidewalk and the road is through there. And that parcel is just going to sit there empty. I don't think that my building, by having my building where it is, it's not going to cause any problems for site distance restrictions or cause any concerns, I don't think, for traffic or being able to have safety concerns there. Certainly we would ask that you would certainly consider giving us this opportunity to have this variance of the 10 feet so that I can build right there along the edge of that irrigation easement. Still maintaining a 24 or 25 or so feet from the roadway with my building, and just be able to utilize that. If I had to turn the building in the other direction and stay 20 feet back from the property line, it would basically eviscerate a good chunk of my backyard to put that in there, and it certainly was something that my wife and I certainly wouldn't want to do. And so if that were the case, we obviously wouldn't build it. So that's why we're here to ask for that variance, to save us the money of having to purchase that from ACHD and be able to go move forward with this opportunity to build this accessory building without having any greater impact than normally would have been if that property was in my business. possession, I could still build that in the same location. And so with that, you know, I'd just say we would ask you to at least consider that, and I'll certainly answer any questions that you have.
Okay, and just for the record, the drawing that he was showing us, I believe, is page 15 of 23 in our packet. Was there any questions for Mr. Dowdy? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, this is a public hearing, and I didn't have anybody sign up for that. Is there anybody that wished to testify in this case that didn't get a chance to sign up? Okay. Seeing none, just as a matter of the way we have to do things here, I'll go ahead and open up the meeting, and if nobody else wants to testify, we'll go ahead and close it, and then it'll be before council. So we'll open the public hearing. And once again, is there anyone who didn't get a chance to sign up that wants to? Okay, seeing none.
I move we close the public hearing.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to close the public hearing in the case of 18-02-V. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And that motion carries, and the question is rightfully before council.
I just want to note for the record, I live in the same subdivision as the applicant. I received a notification about the neighborhood meeting. I didn't attend because it was during a council meeting. And I don't have any personal opinions about it based on my being a landowner nearby. So I don't intend to recuse myself, but I just wanted to make sure everybody was aware of the record.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Well, I'll start. You know, my primary concerns with requests like this is just, you know, the setbacks for safety reasons and for access to utilities, services, and that sort of thing. I did note that because of the unique shape of the lot, staff indicated that they weren't concerned with, you know, maintaining light lines of sight, that there weren't really any of the same types of safety issues that we would normally have for a street side yard setback. I also note that the memo from our city engineer states that Public Works is willing to support the reduced setback because, as I think is important, no other homes would be impacted by the requested setback reduction. Subdivision aesthetics appear to be maintained. It's unlikely that the road would be straightened such that the way that it curves out and kind of gives that equivalent setback would be eliminated. So to me, it appears to comply with the relevant provisions of the comp plan. It meets with all my concerns about safety, access to utilities, that sort of thing, and not like sticking out or being substantially different from the rest of the surrounding properties. So I would adopt the findings of fact in the code analysis that's listed in the packet. And is there anybody else that wants to talk about it before? Mm-mm. Cool.
Any further comment? Nope. Okay.
Then based on the facts and exhibits in the report, no testimony presented tonight, I move we approve case number 18-02-V with the conditions of approval as listed.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve case number 18-02-V with the conditions listed. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? That motion carries. Thank you very much. Next, we have public hearing and consideration to approve proposed Idaho Department of Commerce Community Development Block Grant application and consideration to approve resolution number R86-2018, Lisa Bachman with JUB Engineers is the planner and project manager, and Chris Ingalls is our grant administrator and city clerk. Whoever wants to present first may.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Lisa Bachman with JUB Engineers for the record. So this public hearing is required by the Idaho Department of Commerce for a community development block grant. If you recall, we applied for a CDBG grant in 2015, and we were successful a couple years back, and we were able to construct phase one as a result of that, thanks to a lot of teamwork and many different funding agencies that also helped with that, including the city, to make it a reality. So the funding from the CDBG application will go towards phase two, which includes Main Street from Avenue C to Avenue A, which will complete the Main Street project all the way to the roundabout. So a little bit about the process and project overview. This application will be for $500,000. The application is due next week on November 16th. If we make it to the next stage of the application, we will be invited to submit an application addendum in which we will do a presentation to the governor-appointed Economic Advisory Council like we did last round. A little bit different this time. We are up against some stiff competition, we hear, with other applicants that are going to be putting in for the same funding pot. So there is a chance that if we don't get it this round that we can reapply, and the Commerce staff has just been open and honest with with us about that. And so we are going to try really hard to make the application extremely competitive and get in line for it, because we don't know if this funding will go away, or maybe if one of those applicants they anticipate doesn't submit the application for whatever reason. So definitely want to get in line for that. We should find out around April of 2019 whether or not we're successful. And if we do have to reapply, we'll be all right, because the funding would be available in 2020, which is when all the federal funding that we've already secured will be made available. Now, if we receive the block grant money earlier, we're hoping to put in a request to get the federal funding moved up as well, so we can get construction underway maybe a year earlier. That's wishful thinking, but you never know. We get it through phase one. So a little bit of the project overview. For phase two, we are impacting a different part of downtown. So as you may be aware, we have done public outreach with the adjacent business owners, and we have also re-engaged the design review committee that was part of phase one. We will continue to keep folks up to date as the project moves forward. Right now, we are currently at 95% design, and we are waiting to turn the plans into actual bidding documents until we get closer to securing the remaining funding for the project. We also have Tim Blair here. He's the project engineer, and I brought some displays, so if anybody has any technical questions, feel free to shoot those his way, and he'd be happy to answer those. So speaking of funding, the total project cost, as you can see in your packet and up on the screen, is about $2.6 million. That includes all the engineering, construction engineering expenses, administration. So funding that has already been secured is shown in the green column. That's how we kind of worked with staff to organize it. Pending funding requests are shown in yellow. So as you can see, we've made it pretty far, but we're still really trying to collect as many grants as we can to change that pending column to a secured column. So some of the amounts in the pending column, you see different amounts we put in there for the city, for ACHD, and for Compass, and that type of thing. Some of those amounts could change. So, for example, if we're able to get the Compass funding, you know, that'll impact how much we request from ACHD and so on and so forth. So as far as the details go on those, I will turn it over to Chris to talk about funding.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa. As part of the funding, in the green column, you'll see that we have TMA money, which comes from Compass, then we have state TAP, and those require a 7.34% match. And in the package tonight is a request for $300,000, which would be an all-encompassing match amount. That would match the TMA funds as well as the TAP funds at approximately 7.34%. It also provides a match for the CDBG grant to continue forward. And if we are successful, we have a pending application for additional potential TMA funds in the amount of $554,000. If we're successful with that, that'll be a 7.34% match. I believe that we have the budget available for that in the downtown budget, but I do have some additional funds that can be accessed for that as well. The $300,000 for the city match, the breakdown of it would be the general fund would be $173,169. The water fund is $70,251. And the PI fund is $56,580, which would then bring the total to the $300,000. I do want to share just a few things about the project. It's been such a successful project. The investment that you guys made and the support that you guys provided enabled our team to put together what is now a model for other cities to use. In fact, it's won three awards. It's a federal, state, and local award. Association of Idaho Cities, American Association of Planners, the Federal Highways have all awarded this project. The Idaho Department of Commerce hands out our CDBG application from phase one to other cities that are applying for funding to use as the model for a grant application. Other cities are using the model we put together for assembling various fundings and working with the community to bring a successful project. And that, in essence, what our city has been able to do is to provide a template, to provide a model for other cities to use to preserve their downtown cores, to preserve their hometown feel in the downtown. And that's something I think that will continue to perpetuate. With that said, I stand for any questions.
Okay, questions for Chris. All right. So again, this is a public hearing. As a matter of procedure, we need to go ahead and open this up for public testimony. We had a sign-up sheet back there that I didn't get anybody to sign up on. Is there anybody who wishes to testify that didn't get a chance to sign in? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and open the meeting for the public hearing portion of the CBDG application and Resolution R86-2018. And so once again, was there anybody who didn't get a chance to sign in that wishes to testify? Okay, seeing none.
I move we close the public hearing.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to close the public hearing on the CDBG and R86-2018. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? And that motion carries. And question is for rightfully before council. I will say that there's, after what we did with phase one of this project, it was just very impressive to see the teamwork and the number of people that came together to make that project happen. And really proud of everybody that stepped up and helped with that, because that was quite an undertaking, and like Chris said, that's a model that everybody's using, because nobody else thought that it was even possible to put that many funding sources together for one project. So kudos again on that, and hopefully we can pull all these off again this time. So.
Yeah, I just wanted to note that in looking at all the funding sources, even though this is almost a $2.7 million project, the city of CUNA is only contributing about 27% of that. So it's certainly a great return on investment, and I'm excited for the rest of the project to get finished.
Okay.
So does anybody else want to say anything?
Yeah.
Okay. I move we approve the Idaho Department of Commerce Community Development Block Grant application.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the Community Development Block Grant application as presented. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
So I see the next item is consideration to approve the $300 in matching funds. Do we need to say exactly how much is coming from each fund, or we just say, because it's not broken down for us in our packet, so if we are supposed to say the individual amount, somebody's going to have to say them to us.
Probably would be good to go ahead and list those out. I think you had them.
I do.
Oh, I get to read it? Oh, there's an assumption I'm making the motion. What is this based on?
You spoke first.
Okay. So, building on our last item, I move we approve the expenditure of $300,000. That would be $173,169 from the general fund contingency, $70,251 from water fund contingency, and $56,580 from the pressurized irrigation fund contingency for the purpose of city grant matching funds for the CDBG, state TAP, and TMA TAP grants. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve the $300,000 for the project, $173,169 from the general fund, $70,251 from the water fund, $56,580 from the pressurized irrigation fund. Is there any further discussion?
Mayor?
Yes.
I'm sure there's a good reason, but why isn't there any funds coming out of the sewer?
Councilman Cardoza, there's no sewer work being done there, so we can't use funds out of that unless it directly we have directly a sewer project as part of that.
Did we use sewer funds on phase one when we allocated all those new pipes for wastewater?
I do not believe we did. I can't answer that with 100% certainty, though.
I'm not sure, but Paul, if we're allocating any kind of wastewater on those two blocks, would sewer be involved in that? Wow.
Councilman Cardoza, for my interpretation, sewer would not be eligible to contribute to this.
Okay. So be it.
Thank you. Anything further? Okay, Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Thank you. Next, we have consideration to approve resolution number R86-2018, resolution of the City Council for Kuna, Idaho, approving the professional services agreement with JUB Engineering Incorporated for grant writing and administrative services for the Downtown Revitalization Project Phase 2-A and Phase 2-B. And authorizing the mayor to execute the agreement and the city clerk to attest to said signature.
So this is just the agreement that allows us to compete for the grants and everything that we're considering for funding the project and for writing up the plan and all that kind of stuff. So JUB handled the first phase and is imminently qualified to handle the second phase. So with all that in mind, I move we approve resolution R86-2018.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve resolution number R86-2018. Is there any further discussion?
Mayor?
Yes.
Just out of curiosity, if the grant money is not available, does the agreement have any kind of a meltdown as to the cost? I don't know if I'm making sense here, but if the grant doesn't go through and we don't proceed, does JUB have any increments that would allow us a pay down of the fees?
Mayor, I'd like to defer to Ms. Bachman.
Councilman Cardoza, so the grant writing fee would actually come out of the city fund, but the administration fee in the contract wouldn't charge for it unless we got the grant. And it's worded that way in the contract, and that's how we did it on phase one. So it's contingent on getting the grant.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you, Lisa.
Okay, anything further? All right, we had a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And that motion carries. Item C, public hearing consideration to approve ordinance number 2018-37 and resolution number R85-2018. Bobby Withrow, Parks Director.
For the record, Bobby Withrow, Parks Director, City of Cuna. Mayor, Council, the first part is we want to add some verbiage into the existing code. We are growing and getting more amenities, and we would like to start renting those out. As it states right now, we really can't, according to code. So the first part is adding verbiage like park amenities instead of van shell and gazebo, and we are adding more areas that people can reserve. Areas that can't be reserved are playgrounds and the splash pad, of course. And everything else is pretty self-explanatory, so I stand for any questions about it.
Okay, question for Bobby.
Can I ask questions about C2 right now also, or should I save that?
Sure, let's go.
Is that kosher? Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Page 205 for C2.
Okay.
It's the Exhibit A that has the fees.
Okay.
I just don't know if I'm reading the chart correctly. So I see Banshell. So, like, I'm just going for first column, let's say.
Yeah.
So Banshell, $30. Mm-hmm. Electricity, well, so what would the 10 and 25 after that be? Oh, is that for...
So the band shell would now become $30,
mm-hmm.
and then electricity is an additional $10.
Okay, and so then...
It's always been that way.
So am I reading it? The red is struck through or is added?
Yeah. Okay.
It's struck through?
So the red is what it is right now. So
okay.
Let me explain that a little bit. So if you look at the top, you see the number of people, and then you have 0 to 25. That's what we're proposing to add it to. It was 0 to 15 and then 16 to 35.
Got it.
So we want to take those two out and just make it 0 to 25.
So that totally makes sense. The way that it's rendering on our screens, it looks like it's underlined, and so I just wasn't
okay.
It wasn't showing the same way that corrections from the first one showed. So anyway, I'm fixed now. Thank you. No more questions.
Okay,
good. Further questions for Bobby?
I guess I have one other question. Okay. I noticed that, going back to C1 now, the amenities can be reserved with a minimum of 7 days advanced notice.
Mm-hmm.
Do we ever get requests in a shorter than 7 day period, and is there a reason we couldn't accommodate those?
We can. The reason we put the minimum 7 days is so if people read it, then they'll reserve stuff ahead of time. We have had some cases where somebody will come in Friday and reserve something and not see that was already reserved, and so we double reserved it.
Oh, okay.
There has been instances like that. So we're just trying to get away from that. That way, you know, if we see that it's double reserved 2 or 3 days ahead of time, then we can fix it.
Sure.
And then we will make accommodations of people, you know, 3 or 4 days ahead of time.
Is there any additional, I mean, to the extent that there would be any additional, like, staff time or administrative, you know, time needed, the shorter, the less advance notice there is, I would certainly support, like, maybe having a separate fee for, like, a really last-minute reservation, but I defer to you about whether there is anything like that or if we would just like to say, you know, prefer 7 days advance notice or something like that.
I'd rather leave it. We prefer 7 days because, like I said, we've only had one or two times where it's happened where we've double booked something and somebody had to go out. It doesn't happen that many.
Would you recommend changing the language so that it doesn't say with a minimum of 7 days prior? Let's see. So right now, or the way that we're wanting it to read, it would say basically anyone desiring to reserve CUNA City Park amenities for exclusive use shall apply with the CUNA City Parks and Recreation Department a minimum of 7 days prior to requested date for such use. Do we want to, like, hedge that a little bit?
Yeah.
Just so that people don't think, like, oh, my event's in 3 days. I just can't do it. You know, I'm not going to be allowed to rent it or whatever. Or should we just say, like, on a first come? I mean, obviously, multiple people can't reserve the same thing at the same time, but should we just say, like, on a first come, first served basis?
Yeah.
Or, what would you – do you recommend any change there, or are you happy with how you've already changed it?
I'm happy with the way it reads right now.
Okay.
But if it becomes a problem, then we can bring it back and change it. And like I said, if we need to, we can add a minimum of 7 days or call City Hall for reservations or something.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was actually one question that I had asked because I didn't want to exclude people that wanted to have something, and it kind of came at the last moment.
I'm wondering if
one of the other things was that if they want extra picnic tables, then we have Friday afternoon, we've got to send people out and do that. But
oh, sure.
But we could, you know, if there isn't staff to do that, and we can just make it known that that's not possible at that time. But
or we can do like a minimum of 4 days.
Just because two of us ended up bringing it up, I feel like there's maybe value in changing it. Just because if we both were like, well, what does that mean that you can't? Like, I have a feeling other folks who read it might also have that question. So I don't know if – so it would also require them changing Exhibit A because it does currently read reservations to be made 7 or more days prior, so we need to modify that too. My preference would be to slow track this one just in case folks have comments on the proposed fees or just anything about it. So we don't need to set the language right now if you want to bring back. What you prefer or what you're recommending next time.
Okay, yeah.
And that should be fine. Yeah, and then I guess it does mention, like, rates will increase depending on group size, additional amenities to include electricity and volleyball nets, but I don't see, and I could just be missing it, but I don't necessarily see, you know, you can get additional picnic tables.
That would be on...
Oh, no, yes.
Yes, that is on...
Is it just table rental location? No, that's
no,
green.
It'll be on the last page. The additional picnic tables.
Let's see. Okay, yeah. And so with the various... Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay. Yeah, so if, again, as Joe noted, like, depending on what the reservation might include, if it's made super last minute, like if we're needing to drop things or spend additional money in order to get something ready, like, we could certainly consider putting a short time. Yeah, basically, like, if you reserve at least 7 days in advance, these are the fees. Otherwise, add, you know, 10% or whatever. Yeah. I leave that to you to bring to us next time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Anybody have anything else?
Very good. Anybody else have any questions for Bobby? Good.
You're lucky. My computer keeps crashing on me, Bob.
Thanks, Bobby.
Okay. And again, this is a public hearing.
No, it's not.
It's not? I thought we were on...
Oh, yes, it is. Sorry.
1837.
Nope, I'm jumping.
Yeah, okay. Whew, I thought I was crazy for a moment.
Nope, you're good.
do we need to table, and maybe Mr. Gigray can answer, do we need to
table? There's three hearings.
Yeah, because if we're going to read three times and we published for the public hearing for the fees, do we need to table the public hearing for the fees to the third read?
That would make sense, yes.
Yeah, at this point they're unchanged as advertised.
Okay, do we need an actual motion to postpone the public hearing then?
Yes. We have published for the public hearing. Just leave it open. Okay.
So if we're doing the three readings, it would be two meetings from now, so we could do a date certain.
Or do we need to have it open all three times? Yeah. I think that would be my preference, just so that it gives folks more of an opportunity to show up and provide feedback if they'd like to. So is now the time to do it, or after we're – okay.
I think I can do it now.
So I move we continue the public hearing to accept additional testimony at the next two readings of this ordinance and resolution, the ordinance 2018-37. And resolution R85-2018. So the public hearings, we will accept public testimony at our next meeting on November 20th, as well as the following meeting on December 4th.
Second. Okay. Motion is made and seconded that we will continue the public hearing portion so that we can accept public testimony on the November 20th meeting and the December 4th meeting. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? That motion carries. So this is actually one we're going to slow track for three readings. So I need to go ahead and do the first reading, actually. An ordinance of the City Council of Kuna, Idaho, amending Title 7, Chapter 3, Section 6, titled Exclusive Reservations, to allow for exclusive reservation of certain amenities, and amending Title 7, Chapter 3, Section 7, titled Application for the Reservation, adding a new reservation time frame, and amending Title 7, Chapter 3, Section 8, titled Vacation of Parks upon Request of City to include additional amenities and providing an effective date. So that will be the first reading of that item. That takes care of that one. Very nice.
Mayor?
Yes.
Just out of curiosity, were these published?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, we have to publish the public hearing.
If they've been published, why do we have to open it for public testimony again?
We don't.
If the public's already been notified
resolution. We don't have to.
Okay.
But I just thought because we're suggesting some changes and having Bobby come back with different language, and then because it deals with reserving parks, it just seemed like one that we might, it might be like the rare occasion where we would want to actually give public opportunity at three separate meetings to give feedback if they have any.
Okay.
So I think that would be the biggest thing for me, is because we're making changes. That's
right. So will it be published again?
No, that's why we did the date certains when we made that motion.
Okay, if we made changes or are anticipating making changes to the ordinance, should it be published again then?
Bill, go ahead.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Councilman Cardoza, the publication is for the purpose of advertising either a new fee or you're increasing a fee more than 5%. So that's under the provisions of the law that require that. As long as you don't increase the fee beyond what you've advertised, I think in your continuing the hearings, you're fine. I don't know what changes in the ordinance how that would affect the amount of the fee or whether it would create any new fees. But if you change the fees, increase them over what you've advertised, I would recommend you republish.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Anything further on that one? All right. Consideration to approve resolution number RD5-2018. Resolution of the City Council of Kuna, Idaho, amending resolution number R44-2017 to raise certain fees to cover rising costs, add discount eligibility, add new amenities, add reservation time frames, add reservation deadline, and provide an effective date. So this one I would believe would also be appropriate to table.
It was in my motion about continuing
the public hearing.
Yeah, okay. I included both of them because they were both included in C above.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, very good.
So I hope I didn't jump ahead too far.
No, I think you're right. Item D, public hearing in consideration to approve ordinance number 2018-36 and resolution number R87-2018. Chris Ingalls, City Clerk.
Thank you, Mayor, Council. The ordinance has been read two previous times, so this would be the third read of the ordinance, as well as we properly published for the change in fees because there was elimination of one and then the change for the period of time. I'm having ADD. I'm so sorry. We spoke with the Idaho Humane Society. And if you'll note, in the ordinance itself, it defines the impoundment and the impoundment fees. So their question was, do the impound fees apply to dogs and cats or just cats? So that was a question that I wanted to bring forward at their request. Currently, and there's a little bit of backtracking on this, they've been charging impound fees with no restart, meaning after, you know, usually if you had your dog picked up two times in 1 year, but then he's good for 2 years, you restart, you don't just continue on. There's no contract, there's no resolution, there's no back ordinance that has indicated those impound fees. So they don't have anything, they just think that at some point we told them that. And in addition to that, they charge for impound fees for cats $12.50. So the first round of impound fees are $10, and then they increase from there. So they're concerned if people have to pay a third incident for picking up their stray cat or their loose cat that's been impounded, then people won't come pick up their cat. But, I mean.
Isn't that kind of the point of making it a deterrent, though, right?
Right.
Like,
yes.
It's your third opportunity now.
Right.
Like, you know that this is becoming a recurrent problem.
Right. Our preference would be to apply the same impound fees to cats and dogs. You know, it's really about whether you're maintaining your animal within the city limits. That's the purpose for impoundment. That's the purpose for the Humane Society. That's the purpose for licensing, is to, you know, try and maintain and just follow the rules of society with animals.
Am I correct that the impoundment fees have been added since the last time we had this read, or did I just miss them last time?
The impound fees specifically are listed in the resolution.
Yes. Were they in there last time and I just totally missed it?
No, because
okay.
We don't put fees in the ordinances anymore.
Right, right. So it's only been the ordinance on the...
Right.
Okay. I'll let other folks talk. I just have one question,
sure.
Or I guess one observation or discussion point, which is... I note that impoundment fees will automatically reset after the third impoundment of an animal. I feel like my preference might be that impoundment fees will remain at the third incident rate for all future.
Okay.
Right? I mean, because your fourth instance, you shouldn't – if it's the fourth instance, like, it gets more serious each time, right? This is a recurring problem. We're having to send animal control out over and over and over to deal with your animal because you're not dealing with it. It feels like rather than it going 10, 25, 50 – 10, that it would go 10, 25, 50, 50, 50, 50. You know what I mean?
So there would be no reset on it?
Right.
Okay.
I mean, maybe, I guess I'm open for discussion if we would want to entertain a reset based on duration. So, like, if somebody's animal gets out January 1st, 2019, and then it gets out again January 1st, 2021, to me, it might make sense that it resets every 2 years or something like that, where it's like, then it's just a fluke, you know what I mean?
Right.
Versus if they're coming out every month or every 2 months or something like that, then it's like a chronic problem versus just like, oh my gosh, my animal got out. It was just a, you know?
Right.
So, chat amongst yourselves.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I like that idea.
Okay. What seems like a reasonable time frame if anybody else likes that idea?
For me, actually, I would say even a year would be sufficient. I mean, the biggest reason usually that I see somebody's dog gets out or cat gets out or whatever is a kid leaves the door open accidentally and off they go. So I think if it only happens once a year, that shows at least they're trying to keep their animal contained. And,
mm-hmm.
Anybody else?
Cool.
Okay.
I have one question on the license term.
Yes.
If I was to buy a 5-year license and my dog died, would I get a prorated refund?
No.
We do not have that provision in there, no.
Okay. If I had a 5-year license for a dog, and my dog died, and I got another dog, would that license be transferable to the new dog?
No, we do not have a transfer provision.
Okay. So it's best to buy a 1-year license.
No, you get a discount if you buy more. I mean, it's a calculated risk, right? Right. That was the idea behind doing a discount for multi-year. So when right. you pay 5-year, it only actually costs you a 3-year.
But wouldn't it be fair to the owner of the tag that if his dog dies and he gets another one, it would be transferable?
I don't necessarily have an objection to that if it's, like, administratively possible, because we are keeping the same number, right?
Administratively, with the system that and tracking, I mean, certainly we will accommodate whatever council direction is, but that will definitely be administratively a little bit of a juggle. We have had people that register Fido in January, and then they come in, maybe the dog gets picked up, or the dog got, we had this happen, their dog got loose, they knew it was going to get picked up. So they wanted to transfer Fido's license to Spot's license, you know, to the different dog. Even though they had both dogs, they just only registered one, and then they keep passing the license back and forth depending on who got picked up because the dogs were similar in color. There's all kinds of things that people get creative with. So, I mean, certainly if it's your direction that we look at a transfer policy, I mean, we can make that work if that's what you want, but part of the reason of going to a single license that just stays with you and doing the reduced multi-year is so that you just come in, it's licensed. If your dog ever comes up missing, we can hopefully get you reunited with your dog and get your dog home. So.
Okay.
And the hope was, too, I don't know if you remember, we used to have it set up where – like, if you get a dog between January and June 30th, you pay one rate, and then if you get it July 1st and through December 31st, it's half price, but then the license is all expired on December 31st. So if you got a dog on Christmas Day, came in and licensed it like you were supposed to, you'd pay for a six-month license, but then you'd have to buy another year license in a week. And so we're trying to make it, like, more user-friendly. The licenses go from the date you buy it, and it's that calendar day is when you would renew it. And then the whole idea with doing like a 5-year, you only pay for 3, so we're trying to like do you a solid there. And then the idea would be, you know, you have to renew it much less frequently. And the number stays the same, so you don't end up amassing a bunch of different tags. And
right.
Yeah, I'm still definitely open to ways to make it even more user-friendly if we want. I just don't know, in order to avoid the problem you're talking about, I don't know if we would need to, like, I don't know, charge an administrative fee for switching the license. I don't want to say the license holder, but the animal the license applies to. Like, I feel like there would need to be some sort of administrative fee for the time, so you wouldn't end up having to pay, like, the whole new license fee. But then I feel like in order to avoid the problem Chris mentioned, like, we'd probably have to require some sort of proof of something. And I'm trying to think, I mean, I guess the last time my dog passed away, like, I might be able to provide a bill from the, you know, euthanasia or the cremation or something like that. Do we feel comfortable requesting that type of thing from people? Because, I mean, I hear the problem that you're mentioning.
Not everybody does that. Some people just handle it on their own.
Or if the dog passes away naturally and then they just bury it on their property,
right.
I could understand that there wouldn't be any
right.
any sort of documentation.
You know, in general, we don't transfer licenses. It's just not been something that, you know, business licenses, we don't transfer those. We don't transfer alcohol. We, in general, haven't transferred licenses. If you're interested in us trying to figure out how a transfer would work best, we can certainly do that. We would need to figure out if the animal was altered, you know, if the first animal was altered and then the second animal was not altered, you know, what's the transfer fee and then, you know, the prorate fee. And certainly we can put something together. If you'd like to table this, I can certainly bring back something that maybe might be interested in, and then we could republish for fees. I just would like to be able to have the fee schedule so that we can get renewals out as close to the early December as possible.
I feel like that was another great point in terms of the, you know, the fees are different depending on if the dog is altered or not, and so to me, it kind of makes sense that maybe we wouldn't do transferable, and it's kind of just, I don't know. I don't know if we want to, well, I was going to say, do we want to do, like, a discount on the next, like, if you can bring any proof that you didn't use the full amount of your last license, but I don't know. It kind of just seems like it's going to be a calculated risk.
I mean, maybe a consideration would be, we roll this out, we look at it for the next 12 months or the next 24 months. For those that are purchasing multi-year licenses, see if the requests for transfers, you know, are being made, and if so, then I think it would be appropriate to come back and address it and have some kind of transfer option to consider.
What do you think about that?
I didn't think issuing pet licenses were a concern of money-making. I thought it was more of being able to track the animals to the lawful owner.
So. We're not looking at, we don't make any money per se. It's to cover the administrative costs, really.
Okay.
That's why we went with multi-year, because at first it was like we were ordering tags. I don't know if you recall what our tags looked like, but they had the specific year on them. And so we had to switch to, like, a totally different type of tag so that they're not year-specific. And, like, this has been in progress for a while in terms of, like, trying to make it more user-friendly. I mean, that's definitely been all of our goal.
And it is more expensive for non-altered animal only because we try and encourage people to have an altered animal. We want to, you know, make it a benefit to neuter or spay your animals so that we don't have uncontrolled babies everywhere.
Warren? A word of wisdom?
I don't know. The only word of wisdom I'm looking at this right now is it's not about making the money, but at some point we got to keep it simple for the residents too. you start talking about multiple transfers, this, that, and the other thing when it comes to animals, I think you start making it too complex, and looking at a multi-year was to help simplify things, and I don't know if it would be a hindrance just to stick with simple and not go the route of starting to incorporate transfer fees and all the animals and from this, that, and the other.
So. Two against one, so we'll just table it.
Well, Councilmember Cardozo, I want to assure you if we start running into transfer requests, certainly we will voluntarily come back and have a discussion.
If you can keep an eye on it, yeah. In fairness to the citizens, constituents, I'd be curious how many come in when their animal dies and wants a transfer.
Absolutely. So, we will definitely
thank you.
Keep track of that.
So just two final things for us to finish talking about before we decide if we want to pass this or not. Do we want to have different rates for impoundment of cats versus dogs, as was mentioned, or are we fine with it being the same for both?
Same for both.
I think it makes sense.
Just okay. And then are we fine with changing footnote 2 on page 6D to page 2 of 2, so it's the exhibit A of resolution RED 72018. So it currently says impoundment fees will automatically reset after the third impoundment of an animal, and we would change that so that it reads impoundment fees will automatically reset after one calendar year from, do we want to say from the date, the last date of impoundment, or?
I think so.
Bill, did you have something?
Does that sound good?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, did you get that?
No.
Right now it says impoundment fees will automatically reset after the third impoundment of an animal. We'd like to change that so it says impoundment fees will automatically reset one year following the last date of impoundment of an animal.
I would almost go with first date of impoundment because you might be looking at those people where it is a fluke every 10 months. And
if it happens every 10 months, to me that's like your animal's probably unaltered. And it's like getting out because it's trying to breed or something. I mean, that only happens like twice a year for dogs. So,
right.
Just to me, it's like that way. If it's becoming a problem and it's getting out multiple times in the year, and then you correct the problem and it doesn't get out for a whole year, then like, all right, you're back to it's your first offense kind of a deal. I don't know. We just have to draw a bright line somewhere.
That makes sense.
Is that like accident forgiveness?
Well, technically, I mean, even if we say from the date of, well, so you're saying if a dog could get out.
The dog gets out in January as a fluke.
Uh-huh.
And we have it worded as the last impoundment, and the dog gets out in November.
Right.
You're looking at still 2 years of no reset.
No. I'm saying, so it would be, yeah, so your dog gets out in January, $10. Your dog gets out in November, it's still going to be $25.
Right.
Regardless of whose language we're using.
Right.
So then the only issue is if your dog gets out a third time. Within the next year from November. I don't know. At that point, it's a third time. Like, it's a third time.
Third
I don't
time.
Know.
Yeah. No.
I don't know.
I'm not totally set on saying first. It was kind of just a passing
thought. Yeah,
but
it makes sense to
really do either. It's setting it from at least something, a trigger like that, not a necessary.
Yeah. All right. We good with that then?
Yeah.
Somebody beeped.
I mean.
Yes.
Yes,
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, as you're considering this, number one, I don't know what was advertised and if your fees would change with what's been advertised for setting a new fee or increasing a fee that would increase what was advertised. You may have to do another publication. That'd be number one. Number two, I think there's two things here. People that are violating the animal control ordinance of the city are going to be subject to an infraction for violating the ordinance, which is a punishment. And that's the punishment for allowing the animal out and then violating the law. With regards to impound fees, that's a matter of providing a service for impounding the animal and feeding it and harboring it while the owner is found. And so the thing you want to be careful about is with fees is that fees have to have a reasonable relationship to the cost of providing the service, not revenue, and they're not punishment. So I just
So can we, let's engage on that for a second. So there are two fees in here. There's the impoundment fee, and then there's the boarding fee. So the boarding fee is supposed to actually compensate the shelter for their costs, as I understand it, in holding the animal. But then there's also the impoundment fee that deals with, I would argue, the animal control officer driving out from the shelter, getting the animal, and then taking it back. To me, there should be a penalty or a dissuasion element to repeat offenses such as this. So I think that's part of why we were thinking of having the graduated fees for repeat offense capped at a certain amount for incident three and thereafter. But I would like to explore that more if that is not actually allowed.
I believe there's a – and I haven't read – I haven't prepared for all of this. There's a habitual violator provision in the animal control ordinance I see here, which I think has some enhanced penalties under your ordinance for that type of thing. You may want to review that. You may want to get a sense of how your animal control ordinance regulates the control and impoundment of animals in the city, and then I'm just saying I think you're providing a service. You're correct. The impounding would be you've got officers. They have to go to the scene. They have to do all of the administrative work of following the animal into impound and so on. I think that's clearly justifiable. But I'm just saying as you're thinking about this, think about your authority to impose fees for reasonable services provided by the city versus your authority under your ordinance authority to have violation of this control, and that's an infraction, and with enhanced penalties for repeated violations.
So are you suggesting the way this is written, we might need to modify it such that the impoundment fee remains consistent and that there's some sort of additional fee or infraction penalty that would potentially slide based on if somebody becomes a habitual offender? Or
I would say with the in consultation with your administrative staff and with the enforcement officers, it may be a worthy conversation to look at to make sure that as you're doing this that you're comfortable with how this all fits together.
So I will jump in. So the Humane Society has reviewed all of this, and there is a standardized with the jurisdictions, the cities, that they do a graduated impound fee as a deterrent. So that's what most jurisdictions do. However, we're free to do as we choose.
I know that most folks are here to not testify about this, so would it be advisable to, not that anybody signed up, but to continue the public hearing while you take a quick look at the way the ordinance is written and see if we need to reset this at all? I mean, it's fairly short. It's only like three pages.
And I'm thinking in terms, as long as you've got a reasonable relationship for the impounding fees to the cost of the city of providing the service, I don't really have much concern about it. And if you decide that you're going to have more of a loss in the front end and then repeat it, I still think you'll be able to support it. I'm just throwing this out there as issues that I see when you're dealing with these two subjects. But I'll look through this if you want.
We're at a minimum going to have to go through, I think, the process of opening a public hearing and then seeing if anybody wants to testify. So we'll at least have a couple minutes. If I don't know if that's enough time, but if you want to scan through real quickly. And
this is September 4th.
Did we just save it from the first time?
Probably.
Okay.
It doesn't look like the council determines the fees. That is set by the animal control shelter.
Just for the boarding, but for the impound.
Well, even the boarding, isn't it set by the...
Boarding is set by the Humane Society, and then we set the impound fee.
But those are determined by the animal control shelter, aren't they? With acceptance by the council?
Yeah, we're under contract with the Idaho Humane Society,
right.
So we set those fees for them.
Not the boarding one, though.
But not the boarding one. So
okay.
The others would be set by the city by ordinance because it's an action that we're under contract with them. Much like with the sheriff's department, we have to have ordinances that match the city that are the same as in the county. Otherwise, they can't enforce things.
But don't they have general fees that they use throughout the county for each city?
No, each city develops and establishes their own. I mean, there are a lot of similarities, but each city does what fits for their jurisdiction.
Just like with the licensing fees, like Boise's are much higher than ours, I think, even for dog licenses.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We're going to be the only jurisdiction that does a three-year license, you know, or, you know, a five-year license for a three-year prize. There are jurisdictions that do multiple years, but our license structure is a little bit different, as is everybody's.
Okay.
Yes.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, when I'm looking at this ordinance, I'm looking at 10.323 E and F. It says animal shelter shall be entitled to charge a fee for keeping and selling an animal, and these fees shall be retained by the animal control shelter. That's E. F says the charges associated with selling an animal shall be determined by the animal control shelter by the city council. I don't know if this is a different thing.
I think you're reading the I think you might be reading the old version, because the new version E should read impoundment fee. The animal control shelter shall charge a fee set by resolution of the city council of CUNA. Yeah, there should be like a marked up version and then the final like unmarked version. But so we have impoundment fee is going to be set by city council and will be remitted to CUNA. And then we added a new section F that's boarding fees that says that they can keep the.
I'm looking at the internet, so I probably have an older version.
Oh, do you not have the packet?
Can you
help him pull it up real quick, Chris, while we do the.
Go to CUNA.
New guys, you got to teach them everything.
We're on page 3 of 8, 6D1.
I don't know if we're so far into this we should just finish it, or if we should
yeah.
It's like when you're eating an entire chocolate cake, just go ahead and make the last few bites.
Yeah. If we think we can finish it in like the next couple minutes, I'd say let's finish. Otherwise, maybe we should try to take things out of order.
Do you have it pulled up here?
Mm-hmm.
Can you see it?
Is it okay to go ahead and open the public hearing?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that at least.
All right, so we're going to, I didn't have anybody sign up, but we're going to go ahead and open up the public hearing on this issue. Is there anybody who wishes to testify in the dog licensing and impound fees ordinances that didn't get a chance to?
Now that you've heard all of our exciting discussion. No.
Okay, seeing none.
I move we close the public hearing.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to close the public hearing in the matter of dog licensing and impound fees. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries.
Do we want to hold for another couple minutes, or do we want to take things out of order and jump to the next?
Yeah, why don't we just
table
and talk
for
item D?
Pardon?
We're missing Troy, and he's the next one up.
Oh.
He's what?
Troy is
what?
Absent.
Well, maybe we don't need Troy.
Go.
All right, so we're going to table that one until after we get done with The next item on the agenda, which is a public hearing and consideration to approve case number 18-05-S, Madrone Heights subdivision. The applicant requests approval to subdivide approximately 39.5 acres into 206 single home lots, an additional 27 common lots, and one shared driveway. The address is 2030 West Cuna Road, Cuna, Idaho, and is located near the northwest corner of 10 Mile and Cuna Road in section 22T2NR1W, APN number S13224384000. I don't have the name of the applicant, so I guess we need to have Troy.
Okay.
Since you're not on the agenda, would you mind going and state your name and address for the record, please?
Sure. Kevin McCarthy, Kane Engineering, address 9233 West State Street. I'm here representing the Madrone Heights subdivision for the property owner, Mr. Tim Mack. As you stated, it's a subdivision of property 40 acres in size. It's currently agricultural ground. It's on the north side of Cuna Road, about a quarter mile west of 10 Mile. Early this year, the property was annexed into the city of Cuna with an R6 zoning, and we're showing on this preliminary plat, when it was annexed, the max density of 5.2 dwelling units per acre was approved. The attached preliminary plat proposes 206 buildable single-family residential lots, 27 common lots, and one shared driveway lot, and the layout reflects a gross density of 5.2 units per acre. The project also includes approximately 3.4 acres of open space, most of which is located in the center of the project, where we're planning to have soccer fields. There's also walking paths throughout the project. At the P&Z hearing, there was some discussion about the common lot in our northeast corner and the pathway around that. In an updated landscape plan that we provided to the city, we now have a pathway going all around that common lot where it could potentially tie into a city pathway that would be along that northeast corner if and when that happens, there'd be a connection there. We reviewed the staff reports from the city of Cuna and ACHD, and we don't have any comments on either report. We agree with the conditions of approval listed therein. We appreciate working with city staff and ACHD on this project, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
You should be able to jump in.
Okay, questions for Mr. McCarthy? Okay, none at this time.
Thank you.
Troy.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. Just for the record, Troy B. Hinton, Planner 3, 751 West 4th Street, Cuna, Idaho, Planning and Zoning Department. The application before you tonight is the preliminary plat for the Madrone Heights proposed subdivision, 18-02-S pre-plat. It is presented to you for your vote to approve, conditionally approve, or to deny the application. The noticing procedures have all been fulfilled to hold the public hearing tonight. The Planning and Zoning Commission did hold a public hearing in September of this year, and they recommended an approval with a few conditions that are listed inside your packet that was presented to you earlier. There was a design review application that accompanied this project, and it was approved by the Planning and Zoning Department back in the early part of September, based on the condition that they work with staff to amend the northeast corner for the pathway, which they did provide, and staff was satisfied with the proposal of the walkways and things like that to continue the or to actually begin the greenbelt on that side of the Indian Creek. The applicant does seek to subdivide the approximate 39.48 acres into 206 single-family homes. Also provide 27 common lots and one shared driveway for the subdivision. This project is in the city, Cuna City limits, and was approved earlier this year for the R6 zone. And with that annexation and that zoning approval from this council, there was a max number of density that they could propose a subdivision for. They are within that cap. This project does have significant frontage along Cuna Road. It is near the northwest corner of 10 Mile Road and Cuna Road. It's about a quarter mile west of 10 Mile, as Kevin indicated. The applicant has provided for a mid-mile collector on the west side of the property along his portion of the project, and there's a considerable amount of landscape buffers and internal open spaces. Staff and the Planning and Zoning Commission do agree with the recommended ACHD turnaround for the west side of that mid-mile collector, and that I believe it was condition number 9 in the site-specific conditions. But that was listed in the ACHD staff report. Staff does agree with their proposal, and the commission also supports that as well. Staff is not concerned about the shared driveway that they have proposed. The applicant will be required to extend and bring all city and public utilities to and through the site, which could include up to 4 phases of the project to full build out, which is the 206 homes. Staff has worked with the applicant to get the information to you tonight. We've had a good relationship with KM Engineering and the applicant, and they provided everything that we've asked them to, and in some cases they've gone above and beyond. We find that this project is in concert with the annexation and zoning conditions that were placed upon it at the annexation hearing earlier this year, and we also find that it's in concert with the comprehensive plan map and the comprehensive plan itself, and I would stand for any questions that you might have.
Okay.
Okay, questions for Troy.
I could swear, and I'm trying to make sure that the annexation documents aren't in here and I'm just missing them, that when we annexed this, it was a maximum density of 4.2, not 5.2. I'm almost positive.
You beat me to it because I do remember.
And it was based on a sewer capacity issue. Is there any way we can double check on this?
I can go and pull the minutes, but I'm confident it's 5.2.
I would, sure.
I thought he came in with an R8 and came down to an R6, and then we agreed to an R5.
You agreed to
an R6 with 5.2 is what we agreed to, or the council agreed to.
I mean, I remember there being a 0.2, but for some, like, I mean, the fact that it's in his head too and we haven't talked about this makes me just think, like, it bears
the
checking.
The 4.2, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No.
The 4.2 that you're thinking of actually is on another project by this owner. And that's coming to council on the 20th.
Is that north of the tracks, though?
Correct.
Because the thing that's sticking in my head was it was south of the tracks, and we set it at 4.2 because there was a sewer capacity issue. I want us to check on this. I'm not going to, like,
no, that's fine.
I mean, I won't vote on it until I can,
that's fine.
For sure.
I can go pull the minutes.
That would be awesome.
Is she referring to the Inez property? Or?
All I can remember is that I thought it was a TMAC project, and I thought it was I know it was south of the tracks.
The big discussion we had, too, was the sewer issue.
Yeah.
We were getting Bob's input on what it could support, what it couldn't support.
Sure.
We talked about that right around that mark that he had triggered, saying we could possibly support right around that 4 house per acre mark.
I'm about to tell you. Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Thank you.
Public Works recommendation was R4 or less. I don't know if that helps clear it up, but I also thought it was 4.2, but I can't be certain on that. But so I remember we were requesting, just reading our recommendation here, was R4 or less. But
what's the date?
June.
Yeah, we came in just slightly over what you were requesting, just to make you mad.
You said you thought it was May or June?
Yeah.
I'm going to start looking through my stuff, too.
If the council would be so kind to grant me about 30 seconds of time, I can run back to my computer and have it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's...
We're timing you. We should have had Chris start the timer.
Right. Let's see. Okay, so it... No, wait, no. Is that it? No, that's true. Okay.
This is going to be a public hearing, and I only have one person that signed up to testify. Is there anybody else that wishes to sign up? Okay, if you want to come grab this and...
You can just do it right there if you want.
So the... in favor, neutral, and in opposition, and then if you want to testify or don't want to testify.
Oh, yeah, no, sign up to testify then. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just checked May and the first one in June, and I don't see it on those.
Very good. Thank you.
February?
Is Urza and Madron the same?
Yeah.
So this was heard on February 20th.
Okay.
The site was formerly known as the Urza property, and the request was the 39.48 acres with an R8 zone, medium density residential. The request recommendation remained the same as it was. No more than an R4. Mr. Bachman said he could work with an R5, but they recommend an R4. The final motion was Council President Boobin Vonderhaar moved to approve 1709 AN annexation with the conditions of approval as listed in the packet. Also noting the density request was changed from R8 to R6. With an actual density of no more than 5.2 units per acre.
Okay.
Seconded by Member McPherson. Motion carried 3-2. Mayor Steer voted aye. There was a tie. Council members Cardoza and Christensen voted no.
Oh, okay. So you didn't even have to leave. It was February. You found
February,
it out.
Yeah.
Okay. Any further questions for Troy?
I don't think so. Not okay. At this time.
So, in between, I'm sorry, not in between, at the public hearing for the planning and zoning meeting, staff was given some letters that were from citizens, and they didn't make it into the public record. Therefore, when I made the packet this time, not thinking about the fact that they were presented at the public hearing, they were not included. I have them tonight, and they do need to be added to the public record. I have a packet for each of you.
Okay.
One of the letters was...
Thank you.
One of the letters was submitted today.
Okay.
There's three in total.
Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Okay, one of these is from Nancy Simper, and you've signed up to testify. Do you want this read into the record, or would you rather? Okay. Okay, we'll do that. So then we have two other letters here. One is from Richard Deutsch, to whom it may concern, our property is the 30 plus or minus acres just east of Madrone Heights subdivision at 10 Mile Road on Kuna Road. The main concern we have is the public access to my property. At times there are at least 50 to 75 head of cattle on our property. Public access will not be suitable. The proposed road out of the subdivision onto our property, approximately 600 feet north of Kuna Road, must be blocked off with solid fencing as proposed around the whole subdivision. Barbed wire and or climbable fencing will be an open invitation for access into our field. At a prior meeting, Mr. Eck and I discussed this very problem. He showed concern and had no problem putting solid fence across my west boundary until such time as my property was developed. The second concern is the two greenbelt access points out of the north boundary of the subdivision into Tim Gordon's property north of Madrone Heights. Along the fence line for a quarter mile, we cannot demand that the two access points be blocked off because they do not adjoin our property. I've called Mr. Gordon to talk with him about this complication, but he has not called me back to set up a meet time. Herein lies the problem. At the northwest corner beyond our common boundary with Madrone Heights, we have a gate access, approximately a 10-foot opening, into Gordon's property. At this time, cattle are grazing between Gordon's property and ours. So until these two properties are developed and the two access points mentioned above cannot be open to the public. By the way, we own the property to the north from Indian Creek to the UP Railroad and from 10 Mile Road to the west to the railroad bridge. From there, the creek travels out of our property to the northwest. In addition, we own the creek bed, and the ditch company has an easement to pass their water through our property. We keep access closed from the railroad bridge at the northwest end of our property, as well as the fence we put up over the creek bed at 10 Mile Road to keep the cattle contained when the creek is dry. We would appreciate you keeping these two concerns in mind when making your decision concerning public access from McGrone Heights subdivision into our property. Any questions, please call us. If no answer on the home telephone, we will call the cell number. Yours truly, Dick Deutsch. Are you going to want to testify and add anything to that? Or? Okay. Then the other one was actually an email that I had received, and I forwarded it to Troy and told him that I'd received a communication on Madrone Heights that would be considered ex parte, so it would need to go with the council's packet when it's heard there. This is from Randy Moore. Dear Mayor, A, this land is not suitable for land development. It is not border city limits. The impact fees are not enough to cover all the expenses of new growth. New growth should pay for itself. No more bonds for schools and other services. Impact fees paid by the developer or by new homeowners will pay for 8% of each new home built. 1, roads. 2, buried power. 3, water. 4, sewer. 5, schools. 6, police. 7, fire. 8, parks. 9, libraries. 10 subsidies to keep our farms, 11 smart planning ahead for growth, and 12 other services. I don't want the Treasure Valley to be like the Phoenix metro area. They built to the outer edges, so it's a large sprawl city surrounded by desert. All the orange groves, vegetable farms are all gone. Subdivisions are everywhere. If development must happen, make it pay for itself, the residents that are already here. Impact fees. Randy Moore, native to the Treasure Valley. and so I would also consider that to be my notice of an ex parte communication that went no further than this. And then that's all I have. All right, so we have two people that have signed up to testify. I'm going to go ahead and open up this public hearing. First, we have a neutral signed up to testify is Cindy Gerson. Yes. So if you want, come up to the podium and state your name and address for the record.
Hello. I'm Cindy Gerson, and I live at 1363 South Ash in Cuna.
Okay.
When I noticed another subdivision was coming up to be heard, I did a pretty good search, I think, on lighting regulations. And as all I could find was the unincorporated Ada County regulations that, you know, had missing links and things like that. But they were well known for their dark sky considerations. And I don't know if I couldn't find that in the zoning, you know, when it talked about lighting, it's just about what kind of wire you should use. And I, you know, and I'm not that familiar. I haven't been to the council before because I'm fairly new. But anyway, I just want to ask that when you're considering these large developments, if you would consider an ordinance that would keep the skies darker. And actually, it turns out to be cost savings. You know, it's usually LED light with some framing around them. And I see you even have them kind of out here in the parking lot. So maybe you're already doing that. But I just would like it to be part of the discussion. You know, as I look out from my property, I'm on King and Ash, and I can see the glow of Cuna. And so I just hoping we could keep that down.
Okay.
And I see that this has soccer fields, streets, and, you know, a lot of homes. And anyway, it makes a big difference.
Yeah, so we do have a part of an ordinance that addresses that. If you would like at some point in time, staff would be happy to go over that with you so you can see what it actually is.
Could you tell me the number of it? Because I did.
Do you know what that is off the top of your head?
With an H in it.
If you go to the City of Cuna website, which is cunacity.id.gov, we have a link to the code there. You can say it out loud.
642T, I believe.
Okay. I was going to try to look it up
so
right
I
now.
That's off the top of Troy's head.
Yeah, so, yeah, because there's a standard, and I'm
looking it up
on
right
the
now, too.
Dark sky and all that.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find anything. So thank you for incorporating that. Just one other note is I see that around here, what you call bike lanes often don't seem to be bike lanes. And so, some are pretty narrow. So I'm just thinking, I noticed this whole subdivision would not, you know, it has walking paths, but maybe not bikes. I don't know how close it is to schools and things, but what I've seen the bike wider ones, but then they disconnect, or I've seen ones that are like kept this much room. Anyway, I'm just in future subdivisions. I just wanted to ask for more consideration on that.
Good.
That's
perfect. Yeah, you bet. We know we have a lot of areas within the city that aren't going to develop anytime soon, and those are problem areas for bikes and that. So we're working on that in conjunction with ACHD to try and get some of those issues taken care of and sidewalks and other things like that. But as new development comes in, one of the requirements is pathways and trying to make connections. And I think that's what one of those letters was talking about was access and that type of thing. So we do try to look for that, but thank you very much.
Well, thank you for your hard work and considerations.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Next, we have Nancy Simper. If you would just state your name and address again.
So is it okay for me to just read what
you
I'm
sure may, yes.
I'm really nervous
My name is Nancy Simper. My address is 4597 West Deer Flat Road in CUNA, but outside of CUNA. So on page 61 of section 6E of the packet regarding this development, the Idaho Transportation Department's Development Services Coordinator states, quote, ITD objects to the proposed application due to traffic concerns. End quote. So while I'm personally not opposed to development and new neighbors, I am opposed to this one. I object to it for the same reasons due to traffic concerns. I believe that at this time we don't have the roadway infrastructure needed to support the increased traffic into CUNA from the west side of town during peak times. This significant issue was overlooked in the traffic impact study. The TIS only evaluated the intersection of CUNA Road and Black Cat Road and that 1 mile stretch between Black Cat and 10 mile. However, it's reasonable to expect that the families in this new development would be making frequent trips into town to for school, work, shopping, library, community events. So I think it was vital to study the impact on Avalon Street from the 10-mile intersection to the railroad and creek crossings. In my 13 years of living on the west side of town and traveling into and out of CUNA on this road, I've observed that there's usually traffic congestion in the mornings due to the number of cars and school buses that are heading east on Avalon into town. When there's also train crossing at that time, this congestion is at a standstill as far back as Ash Avenue, and it affects the traffic on roads that are intersecting with Avalon in that area. And then after school, as the traffic leaves CUNA to head back out of west out of town, we have the same problem in reverse with congestion and sometimes standstills that even go down Main Street and onto Avenue D and E, which lead to those area schools. Increased traffic from the new developments will not only negatively affect the residents because of all of the vehicle trips, but it will impede school bus routes for students traveling through this congested corridor. And in the packet again, on page 7, states Idaho Code 67-6513 would require the city to mitigate the effects of the development on the ability of the school district to deliver services without compromising quality. So I believe that's a consideration. Unless a solution is found, not only for the traffic congestion, but also the issue of emergency services accessing the area during a train crossing, this point of entry into CUNA will continue to be a travel and safety problem. Thus, it is my opinion that it's not responsible to add another 206 households to this traffic area until a traffic impact study has been completed, including Avalon Street and the crossings into CUNA, and then the problems corrected in a way that will make it possible to accommodate potential new neighbors. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very
much.
Thank you. You had that timed out right when it went zero. You were done. I don't know how you did that, but that was awesome. Okay. Was there anyone else who wished to testify? Okay. We want to, so if we... Right. You want to have your rebuttal time? Sorry.
Again, Kevin McCarthy, CAM Engineering. Just a couple of comments on some of the testimonies provided. I believe at the P&Z hearing, Mr. Eck did address the letter that Paulie Holtz is, and I know Richard provided, and that stub road to his property, and they did coordinate on whether there'll be a, Tim's going to put something at that end of that lot. We'll have to have barricades for ACHD requirements, I'm assuming, but if an actual fence would be preferred there, we're willing to do that, provided ACHD and the city are agreeable to it.
So okay.
We can take it. We can do that. In regards to the ITD letter, it appears that that is a kind of just, I don't know if that's just a standard response that ITD is providing now on projects that come into this when they get referred something from the city of CUNA. We did have a traffic impact study completed that ACHD did review and provide comment on. That traffic impact study was also provided to ITD. However, they didn't provide comment that we're aware of anyway on that. In response to the letter they provided, my client did contact the company that that prepared the traffic impact study, and they provided a response to that letter that I could share with you if you'd be all right, and either you can read it or I can read it if that's all right.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. And then if you have one for the clerk for the record, would be...
So would you guys prefer I read this letter? Or?
Do we want it read to be in the record, or?
Okay, yeah, that'd be good.
Okay. So the letter's dated November 6, 2018. It's addressed to Tim Mack. It says, Dear Tim, after reviewing the Idaho Transportation comments regarding development application 18-02-S, we have provided the following response. As ITD has acknowledged, the Madron Heights property does not abut the state highway system or directly access an ITD facility. State Highway 69 is approximately 1.5 miles east of the property with access via Swamp Falls Road or Linder Avenue to Avalon Road / State Highway 69. Because the property is not requesting direct access to the state highway system, ITD was not requested to take part in the scope of work for the transportation impact study as required by Ada County Highway District. The study area for the TIS was determined and verified by ACHD using a select zone analysis from Community Planning Association of Southwest Idaho's regional travel demand model for the proposed property. The select zone analysis estimated that approximately 45% of site generated trips would leave and enter the property to and from the east. However, not all site generated trips to from the east would utilize State Highway 69. Upon full build out of the site, the select zone analysis projected less than 1% of total vehicle volumes along Avalon Road, State Highway 69, would comprise of Madron Heights site generated trips as shown in attachment A. Because of the negligible increase in trips along State Highway 69, the proposed Madron Heights property, site-generated trips would have little to no impact to existing conditions currently experienced on State Highway 69. We trust this letter provides additional context to the comments provided by ITD regarding site-generated trips along State Highway 69. Please reach out to me with any additional questions or comments. Sincerely, Brett Corporal, Engineering Associate at Kittleson & Associates. The backside of this, I'll just add to that. He shows the traffic impact study. This attachment is a figure 2, area of influence, peak hour demand contribution for the total peak hour demand for 2022. And what this shows, upon full build out of Madron Heights properties, the site generated trips are projected to account for approximately 0.7% of the total vehicular volumes along Avalon Street, State Highway 69 during the peak. So, anyway. That concludes that letter and exhibit. So
okay.
So with that, I'd be happy to answer any other questions you guys may have.
Okay. Any further questions for Mr. McCarthy?
You don't have a copy of the packet in front of you, do you?
I think your packet, no.
Yeah, okay.
I can get it if you like.
No, my question might be for Troy then, so I'll hold.
Okay.
Mayor, if
yes.
I could have the floor.
You bet.
Cuna Road going west, once it goes past 10 Mile, that continues as a state highway, does it not?
I apologize, Councilman Cruz. I don't know the answer to that.
I thought it continued all the way down to Happy Valley Road as a state highway.
Uh-uh. I don't believe it does, but I can't confirm.
Sorry, Kevin. Troy Buchanan, just to step in. The state highway system actually ends at Cuna Road and Orchard Street at Avalon, or where AutoZone is. That's where the state highway system ends.
So Avalon through town west, 10 Mile west, is considered Ada County Highway District and not a state highway?
That would be correct.
Okay.
The state highway system ends at Orchard.
At Orchard. Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Anything further?
You mentioned that, to your knowledge, ITD was provided the traffic study. Do you know when that would have happened?
Again, I was told, and this is from my client, that that was in July of this year.
Because the ITD letter is dated July 6th, and so their, I guess, assertion is as of that date they were not provided a traffic study.
I think that's a fair assessment, yeah. And my assumption is that they provided it after they received that letter, but then received no comment after providing that.
Okay.
Okay.
Council President Lubin Bonahar, Chair of the Union, just for the record, in the recent past, since probably May or April of this year, ITD has been issuing this letter where they basically say no to everything, whether it abuts the system or not. And as a result, it's kind of caught our planning staff off guard. So they have actually been reaching out to us, meaning the Planning and Zoning Department for CUNA, asking for the traffic impact study that was provided to ACHD.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what happened here. The packet that TIS actually was sent to them on July 2nd, their response on July 6th reflects their comment request from earlier. They had not had time to review a 120, how many pages is it? It's a very large document. In order to process, to read that process and analyze it, takes a considerable amount of time. It takes ACHD usually about 3 or 4 months to actually process through that and review it. So I believe that their letter on July 6th was, hey, we're not going to say anything until it's been digested and we provide additional comments. I have reached out to them since and asked, where are your comments? And I have not yet received an answer.
Possibly for this one, but certainly for future, including any record of that correspondence in the record, I think would be helpful for us in resting assured that that loop has been closed. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Okay. Much of this kind of took us by surprise. And I would say more than 50% of the communication with ITD really has been through phone calls. But we can start doing more of that through email so that we can present it in a format that looks like the loop is closed.
Yeah, because, I mean, to the extent that, if I'm understanding you correctly, they are affirmatively reaching out to us and saying, hey, we'd like to see that study, I think it's valid to then hear what they have to say about it, because it sounds like that's a new thing. And so I think it's worth, yeah, making sure that we're closing that loop.
And the ITD is not actually asking for a new TIS to be performed. They're,
right.
They're
no, they just want
to review the one that's provided to ACHD. It's just that we've never included that with our comments because ACHD is the, we've just never included it. Now they're requesting it, caught us off guard.
Yeah.
Do we need to maybe get them in and have a discussion about the changes and that type of thing, or do we need to go legislatively and talk to their bosses?
We can discuss that.
Okay.
Off later.
And I don't know who this question is for, but don't we normally get the traffic impact study in the packet? I mean, I know we have ACHD's deliberation about it, and they, like, mention some things about it, but it seems like historically we normally see the study. Is that?
I believe it's in the packet.
Could you possibly? I see ACHD's findings of fact and everything.
What page is it on?
It should start right around page 52 or something like that. I'm sorry, I don't know what the packet number is.
272 of 360 on the total packet.
272. Okay. Oh, okay.
No. Yes.
Yes. Sorry.
Additionally,
this is a very long packet.
Yes, it is. Additionally, ACHD is beginning to include the traffic impact study or at least the executive summary in their response that they provide to staff. So it I don't know if it is with this one. It's kind of a new term, but it may be included in the back of their response.
Page 43 of 146.
Is what the on mine? The impact study starts on page 116 of 146, and then there's
executive summary.
Right. No, that I had that. I was. It's very far away from the. The ACHD summary is very far from the trap. That's why I think I was having trouble locating it. I have one other question about the actual packet, and that is if somebody who has access to it electronically can navigate to page 42 of 146. I think this is still in the ACHD study. It's not super well marked. If you look at the bottom of page 42, do you see the number 12? This is overall page 198, in case that's helpful.
Did you say page 42 or 146?
Yes, overall packet page 198. Are you on that page with the the site plan?
Yes.
If you turn to the next page, it's 14, and it's executive summary, and it looks like we're missing a page there. I don't know what it is or if it's relevant.
It's probably a blank page that they left blank intentionally that due to size of packet, it was nothing relevant at all. So
can we confirm that?
Yes.
Just to make sure, because I don't know what's a, yeah, I just, it looks like it's page one of, no, it shouldn't be a blank page, because if I look at the bottom right-hand corner, it's page one of a Kittison and Associates document. If you look at the bottom right corner, starting at page 199 / page 43 of 146, it's a multi-page document prepared by Kittison. It's tiny. Kittison and Associates. So it would be the cover page of something.
It's page two.
Is it just part of
here,
traffic?
It is, right here.
Is it the study?
It's the page that identifies executive section one, executive summary. Because then here's page two.
Okay.
So here's the traffic impact study.
Okay, so it should be replicated later in the packet then? Where we, no, I understand, but if the entirety of the traffic impact study shows up later, I should just be able to confirm that very quickly. Okay, good, got it.
Just to clarify, is it my understanding that you were saying it's become pattern for ITT to object to proposed applications, and that in recent developments and things that they've commented on, they've objected to those as well because it's just kind of repeated history on their part?
I don't know what the reasoning is, but this is not the first project that it's happened where they state, until things get fixed, we object.
Well, I just want to note for the record, their letter doesn't say until things get fixed, we object. It says we object to the proposed application due to traffic concerns. We will withdraw any objection to the proposed application once all traffic concerns have been addressed. But it seems like the overall issue is they say we haven't gotten a copy of the traffic study. And so it's more, I interpret it more a matter of we would like to review the traffic study. And so they're just like objecting until they have a chance to do that. But it is, I mean, the language is subject to interpretation. Do we still have to close the public hearing? We do, right?
We do have the public hearing open, yes.
I don't know when the appropriate time for me to say this is. I know that a lot of times, you know, nobody shows up to testify or everything's pretty cut and dried and we don't really have much room for considering stuff. This is one of the first times somebody's actually showed up and, like, listed stuff that we can consider as reasons for, you know, potentially denying an application or considering if there needs to be further modifications. And I don't want to give that short shrift. So my personal preference would be to table this and not make a decision on it tonight. I'm mentioning that now just in case there is any sort of interest in continuing the public hearing portion of it to receive any additional testimony at the next meeting.
Yeah.
You may already know this. I'm assuming that you do, but I just want to restate it for the record that ITD does not have any jurisdiction on this roadway.
That's fine, but she also cited a portion of Idaho state code that's potentially relevant. So I just want to, you know, we've really hammered lately the whole idea of, you know, it's really hard for us to be able to, you know, consider things that aren't specifically related to comp plan or city code or, you know, the things that we're allowed to consider. And so I just want to make sure that we're, I mean, we delayed one for an entire month just recently, and so over a design review. So I don't think that it's unduly crazy to put this one off for 2 weeks. But if others disagree, anybody's totally able to make a motion and proceed without me.
No one would ever do that.
We can exclude our leader.
Are we extending it to, or would we extend it to then open it up for the opportunity for the public to have more input?
That was the only
on
reason I was mentioning it now before we closed the public hearing, was just if, I don't know if we want to continue it. I don't, like, the last time was kind of a unique situation, so I don't know if we would want to at all, or if.
If we close the public hearing, it's harder to bring it back so we can get more testimony.
Right.
So my suggestion would be if we're going to table it for the date certain that we leave the public hearing open to be.
Before you close the public hearing, am I allowed to say something?
Because she hit all the way to 3 minutes. Does she have a, all the way to 3 minutes?
Although I believe we're going to keep it open for the next meeting for testimony again if you wish then.
I think you were only like 2 seconds off your full time. Anyway.
Yeah. Mayor,
yes.
Ms. Howell is requesting a recess on behalf of Mr. Gigray while he researches Idaho code in reference to this matter.
Okay. Well, then that means we need to move on to the next item because we need to ask him about the last item, so. All right, so we're going to hold off on the rest of item 6E. We'll go to 7A, Idaho Career Development Month Proclamation. Whereas comprehensive career development support is vital to provide career exploration, planning, education, and work-based learning solutions for all Idaho citizens, regardless of age, race, gender, or ability level, and whereas career development services contribute to Idaho's economic prosperity by preparing youth to enter the workforce and helping workers across the state to pursue career advancement opportunities, and whereas state agencies and local municipalities are creating career readiness and workforce opportunities for Idaho citizens, including the Department of Labor, Vocational Rehabilitation, the Workforce Development Council, and the Office of the Governor of Idaho, and whereas Idaho educators at primary, secondary, and post-secondary schools, the State Board of Education, the State Department of Education, and career technical education are dedicated to providing information, training, and professional development necessary to create a skilled Idaho workforce. And whereas community organizations are working to support career development in Idaho, including Idaho Career Development Association, Idaho Counseling Association, Idaho School Counselors Association, IB Idaho Business for Education, and the Treasure Valley Education Partnership. And whereas career development education and readiness opportunities are imperative to help Idaho business fill current and future jobs with a robust pipeline of skilled talent, now therefore be it resolved that I do Alsteer, Mayor of the City of Cuna, Idaho, do hereby proclaim November 2018 as Idaho Career Development Month in the City of Cuna, Ada County, State of Idaho.
Great.
Yay. Let's. I think we have some people who have been sitting here a long time. We'll go ahead and get into this other part. Item 7B, CUNA Police Impact Fee Report and Consideration to Approve CUNA Police Impact Fees and Westcott Galena Consulting. And hi, thank
Galena
you.
Galena Consulting, Mr. Mayor, Madam Council President, Council Members. It's been fun to be at back here. I used to work for the Salt Lake City Council, and it could be like 4 or 5 hours. So I've missed the days about dog licenses, and this was a nice kind of deja vu.
Oh, good.
I know you have a very long packet, so with my short 14-page report, I'm going to give you a summary of just 5 pages, because this is not new to you. You've done this recently with parks and with fire, and it's all pretty much the same process. So I do want to recognize Kelsey Holder and Kara Madrano, who are here from your advisory committee. They also were equally pleased to have shared this experience of this evening. We've had 5 members on our committee representing the community and development, and really appreciate the time that they gave me to vet my assumptions and give me feedback. So on page 8 of my report, land uses, we are projecting, and this is not surprising to you, that you'll be growing to 70% over the next 10 years. So we're estimating about 5,000 households and 850,000 non-residential square feet. That's based on your strategic plan with balanced against Compass, balancing against the numbers that we use for the fire district, information from Colliers, and information that the impact fee advisory gave that they could all agree on. So if you go to the impact fee calculation here for police, we know that you currently have the police working out of their existing space to serve the existing 7,500 residential units, and you have a service level of less than 1 officer per 1,000. Mm-hmm. I know you've all been talking about this with the chief. So given that who's already here and the amount of assets that you currently use to serve your public, everyone here in your community, every single family home's paid about $106 into this infrastructure. And remember, that's only just kind of a double check that we use just to make sure that we're not asking growth to pay significantly more than that. So when I sat down with the chief, and I know he had been informed by the public works director and the mayor in conversations about where are we going forward, you have sort of a double strategy. One strategy is to make sure that your level of service for police does not decline while you grow, and you also have a strategy of actually increasing your level of service. And as you know, impact fees can't be used to cure your deficiencies. It can only keep things going forward. So you'll see that's why I had to break out your capital improvement plan. And what we did is we talked about how large would a facility need to be to meet CUNA's needs in the next 10 plus years. 7,000 to 8,000 square feet. And then I broke that out by how much square footage would be needed just to replace the officers you have now, how much additional square footage you'd need to provide accommodation for growth-related officers. And you've all talked about it would be another 11 officers over 10 years just to keep your consistent level of service. And then if you wanted to meet that 1 officer per 1,000, that's another 12 officers. So we tried to plan for a building that would accommodate all of those needs. You don't know exactly right at this moment where this is going to be, who you might partner with, and you don't need to know. What I needed to do is just be able to figure out how much of a facility would be growth-related so that we could pull that out. And on page 10, you can see that I've done that. of a $1.6 million facility. And again, these are in today's dollars, and assuming that some of the work could be done in-house, $480,000 of that is being set aside, saying growth can pay toward that point until you get some greater clarity on which way you want to go. So if you turn to page 11, and you know how this all works, we take that $480,000-some. Your community is still kind of 92% residential. We're going to divide it by who's coming. And if you wanted to keep the level of service consistent, meaning accommodating those 11 growth-related officers, would be $90 per household, 4 cents per non-residential square foot. That is very, very close to what people have already paid in. So that number made me feel comfortable in that way. Of course, the next question we all always ask is, well, how does it compare to what other people are paying? You see that table on page 12. It is lower than the other jurisdictions that do charge a police impact fee. Those last three, comparable, Star, Middleton, Eagle, obviously also are contracting with the sheriff. So I would not be surprised if this did not set some precedent for some of those communities. But also it's important to look at the full load of your impact fee program. And so this last table on page 12 is your parks, fire, and police fees added together. How would it compare, knowing that most of these other communities have the same ACHD fees as you do? So, so again, you are on the low end, even with these new impact fees if they were to be approved. In the memo that I sent you, I let you know that the Impact Fee Advisory Committee unanimously supported the fees that were set forth in the report. They have encouraged the council to consider adopting them by the end of 2018 because they know there's so much development happening right now. They request to meet in 1 year's time to conduct a complete review of the assumptions about projected growth and construction costs, knowing that things are just changing every day. And then they also request that the city internally keep track of and report on the number of new housing units and the amount of non-residential square feet so that they can check each year against those numbers. And I think that's probably already information that's available. So I stand for questions.
Okay, very good. Questions?
No.
Good job.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate that you offered to come in and help tag on to the fire one so that we could save a little money with this study, and that is very much appreciated.
We're done, yes.
We definitely
support. You're
fully
impact feed out now.
we
have no other option.
Yeah, we always
you will
want
not see me again for a long time.
We always want growth to help pay for itself as much as possible, and like you said, this is kind of the last key to that.
So we've got you taking care while you spend time figuring out how to bridge those other gaps.
Yeah, I was going to say, unless the legislature makes a change and schools can start assessing,
then
in which case we'll bring you right back.
I'll be back,
yeah.
Yes. But I've not seen that look like. So the next steps then for you and my esteemed colleague, Bill Vigre, and I, who spend way too much time together working on fire districts these days.
That you
were a team or that we spend too much time can take you from this point right through the end. It's your planning and zoning hearing for your capital, amending your comp plan with this CIP, and then it's just a fee hearing here at council.
Okay. Well, I don't have any questions, but I was just going to say, you know, one of the letters that we got on the prior issue mentioned, you know, make development pay for itself. Right, impact. And we are certainly trying, as we've seen you a bunch of times, you know, fire district recently assessed an impact fee, which is distinct from what was approved last night by voters, I should note. And then with this one, we really are doing everything we can to try to make growth pay for itself within the limits of Idaho code. Like I mentioned, school districts can assess impact fees, so we can't charge developers, you know, a certain amount of money to go to schools for each house. Yet, talk to your legislators if you want to change that. But so, I mean, I support it heartily. I appreciate all the work that went into figuring out what seems reasonable. I agree that it seems reasonable, and I would certainly move we approve the – yes, go ahead.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, the process that you go – through is this: you're receiving the report on the capital improvement plan and the advisory committee. We have to, by statute, have a public hearing before you approve the capital improvement plan. And we could do that along with your consideration of the approval of the ordinance that will, in fact, implement this particular impact fee. And I'm going to need to take a look at your ordinances, because the one you have has parks and rec, and then you have a separate chapter for the fire district. And so we'll want to look at how we want to do this with regards to your own impact fee for police, and also any adjustments that we need to make in the city code with regards to the standing committee, that this will have to continue as a standing committee, the advisory committee, because they have to report at least once a year on the review of the capital improvement plan to advise the council as any need of any changes and modifications in your impact fee and your capital improvement plan. Okay. So we're certainly be positioned to be able to do that. I just would caution you that, Ann does very good work. The committee's done good work. There's a good report. But to move forward with this now, I think you receive this information, and you could direct staff to proceed with the necessary actions for your consideration of the approval of an ordinance as well as the capital improvement plan, which we could do at the same. You could have a public hearing on both on the same night if you choose to do so.
So for something like this, where a very specific action that is not is required, it would be super helpful if there's some sort of direction given in the packet, because it just says consideration to approve CUNA police impact fees, and then it says action item. So if we are to approve something else or give some sort of specific direction, I would appreciate assistance with how that should be phrased so that it's done correctly, and I'm not like jumping the gun and approving something I don't have authority to move to approve.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, this may have a little bit to do with my trying to catch up with everything that's going on here. Because I know how this works. We've done this time and time again, but that's a process you need to follow, and it's governed, and it's driven by the development impact fee law.
I'm in no way saying that you are wrong. I'm just saying if there is something specific we need to say tonight, if there is action required by us, I need guidance on what the action is, or should it not be an action item?
So I think we don't really need to do an action.
Okay.
We can just accept the report.
Thanks.
And then direct staff to work into the process of advertising for public hearings on both matters. And I don't think any motion other than that is necessary. So.
Thank you.
Thank you so very much.
Thank
you. And Kara and Kelsey, thank you so much for all you're doing for everybody on these impact fees. That's a big benefit, and we really appreciate your involvement in the things that we do in the city here. And you're both a big part of the community with the businesses you're in, so we appreciate that very much. Did you want to come up and sing a song or say anything?
Tap dance?
It's harder to record in the minutes.
All right, thank you.
Mayor, I have a
yes.
question to city attorney. Do we have to publish then this impact fee report, 16 pages, to the public, or it just is open discussion?
Mr. Mayor, with your permission, Councilman Cardoza, no, there's a public notice that we do. It just says that you're considering the capital improvement plan. We identify what it is by title, and it'll be a hearing on such and such a date, and it's not a very large notice, not any larger
okay.
than any of your other notices.
It doesn't have to be published in its entire 16 pages, then, is what I'm asking.
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good. All right, are we ready to come back to? Okay. Which one do we want to start with? We have the.
I think the question on dog licensing was does the ordinance look problematic in any way? And then, you know, our issue was wanting to set impoundment, graduating impoundment fees as a deterrent, and if we needed to change anything in that regard. I think those were the two, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, with regards to the first question, no, I don't see a problem with the ordinance other than maybe its form. I don't know whether it's amending certain sections, which we usually see strike-throughs and underlying showing where it's changed, or if it's a repeal or whatever. Other than that, I'm looking at the language of the proposed ordinance. I don't see a problem with that. With regards to the graduated fee, I think as long as we can justify it and show that we have reasonable expenses, no matter what you set there, you can use your discretion to set the graduation as long as it's within a reasonable determination of the costs associated with the service and the impounding process that we go through. If you want to enhance penalties under infractions under the animal control ordinance, then we'd have to look at some additional changes in the ordinance to deal with that. As a, you know, there's a penalty side of that, which is at the end of the ordinance.
Okay.
So I don't want to belabor this. I don't see a penalty section in this ordinance. The only thing I'm concerned about is we haven't technically done any sort of study to determine what the actual costs associated with an animal control officer coming out here and getting an animal and stuff would be. I don't know if that's required, like if it would be easier to just build this as like a penalty thing, but I don't currently see a penalty section in here where it would be easy to do that.
Council President Bubba Vanderhaar.
Yeah.
So the penalty in the code is actually refers to the penalty that's in a different code section, which tells us if it's a misdemeanor or if it's an infraction. So that penalty isn't included in this amendment.
Right. So the problem if I'm understanding correctly, then what's in our packet is only the portion that's being changed. So I would need to go locate the full ordinance to find the section that talks about that.
Okay. About penalty?
Yeah.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, it appears, and this is typical of animal control ordinances, which are kind of uniform throughout the valley. There was a period of time when those were really being pushed, and we tried to, try to normalize them from, it's usually at the end of the animal control ordinance, where it's where you'll find it. And it's an infraction to begin with, and then if they're continuing to have problems, then it gets up to a misdemeanor.
That's correct, and the penalty. So, Mr. Gigray, then, is the concern then for the impound fees, which the impound fees occur when the Humane Society comes out here because the dog's running the streets with no control, and they pick up the dog and they take it to their facility. So that's what the impound fee schedule is, and so the first time that happens, then the penalty would be the $10, and then if it happens again, it graduates to $25 if you're still not maintaining the dog, and then the $50 for the third. So do those fees need to be, do we need to do a fee analysis with the Humane Society to justify those fees? I am not sure what you're asking.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, the standard rule with fees is you have the ability to charge a fee as long as it's reasonably related to providing a service, but you cannot use fees as a generation of income, or somebody can challenge it as an unlawful tax. That's my concern would be, with as long as it has a reasonable relation to the cost of providing whatever service we're doing, we're fine. Now, if you leave it as it was, if it's a charge by the animal shelter and they have to pay the animal shelter, it's not our fee at all. It's the animal shelter's fee, and it's only a provision in your ordinance that requires the owner of the animal to pay that fee in order to get their animal back, and we have a contract with the animal shelter to do that. If we modify that, as I understand is proposed here, so that it's our fee and we charge that fee, then in that situation, I assume we're collecting the fee or somehow we're retaining, and then we're paying the animal shelter pursuant to the contract for the service they provide to the city.
Well, I think the issue is that we don't ever see the fee.
So the way
it doesn't come to us now, and I don't know, I don't think we would have to get to the point of hiring someone to do a study on the value of this. I think we can. I think it just needs to be reasonable,
correct.
And I think we can come up with what that number would be.
Absolutely. There's no statute that says how you do it. It's just if you ever got challenged, you can go back and say, well, look, we have so, and I can tell you I have a highway district where I have an engineer that does these kinds of studies for every fee they charge. And we all agree that you've got overhead for City Hall, for all your facilities, for your staff, for electricity, on and on and on. And so it's not very difficult to justify the amounts you're talking about here,
right.
I think, in this regard. All I'm saying is, for the record, the basis for your action, I think, would be better centered on the service provided.
The Humane Society estimated that the annual fee is about $800. So it's a pretty insignificant amount overall. And they'll remit to us, and then that money really goes back to paying that contract. So.
Well, I would guess that we need to probably table this and spend a little time looking into it and thinking about making sure we get caught up here on doing this properly. I don't think we want to change a fee until we can actually say that we've looked at exactly what we think it would cost so that we can prove it to be reasonable, even though it's obviously reasonable.
And I can double check, excuse me, Mr. Mayor, with
yes,
your permission.
Yes, go ahead.
I can double check to see if we have some authority to have inducements to people by increased fees. I'm not prepared to answer that question this evening, but I do know very well the general rule about fees, and that's what I've just told you, is if it has a reasonable relation to the expense, and it just has to be reasonable, not exact.
Right.
And if you know it's what your direction is, the numbers and the amounts that I've heard here wouldn't seem to me to be too hard to defend, given all the expense the city has to try to enforce this. You go out, you get an animal, by the amount of time you pay police to go out and do this, or whoever the animal control officer is that does it, and transport, and on and on and on, you're easily into the numbers that I'm hearing. So.
Yeah, I do think it's worth noting that frequently police are called for these kinds of things because animal control can't respond right away. So to me, that should cover any additional, you know what I mean, we're paying for those police services. So I'm good now with all of it, including the change we made to the footnote too.
It's 12 months from the last, it restarts
the
12
last
months.
Impoundment.
What's that?
The last impoundment.
12 months from the last
that's
impoundment.
A word. Is that a word?
Okay, yeah. Sure. I mean, it's already listed in there, so if it's not a word, that's not our
word.
Problem. So does anybody else have any concerns?
I think we pretty well covered them all.
Yeah. You think? Okay. Well, I move we approve ordinance 2018-36.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve ordinance number 2018-36. Okay, so we've done the three reading.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Move we approve summary publication of ordinance 2018-36.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve summary publication of ordinance number 2018-36. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And that motion carries.
I move we approve resolution R87-2018.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve resolution number R87-2018. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And that motion carries. Good. Thank you. And that brings us back to the public hearing on Madrone Heights.
To my recollection, staff requested the recess.
Oh.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah.
Members of the council, as I recall where we were on this, as I was supposed to review Idaho Code Section 676513. Am I correct? Am I on?
Well, we didn't ask for that, but it was requested by Wendy Howell.
Oh.
If that's what.
Do you want me to discuss
that,
it?
That's where we're at, though. Okay. That was a request, yes.
This is really the state statute that gives you authority to enact subdivision ordinances under the Land Use Planning Act, and it identifies some of the provisions that you're supposed to have in your subdivision ordinance. And with regards to financial impacts and so on, then it reverts to what is the development impact fee law, which is in the state of Idaho. So in this instance, and for your consideration, that throws you back to Title VI of your code, which is your subdivision ordinance. And so the standards of which you will judge this particular application for approval of the preliminary plat are really the standards which I believe are in the staff report as well as in Title VI of your ordinances, and that's your subdivision ordinance. So I don't really, if the state of Idaho is relying upon that state statute to give them standing to object to this preliminary plat, I don't really see that as a very good argument. I think if they have relevant information that they want to have that plugs into your standards and your subdivision ordinance, then that's a different matter. And I think you have to look at it from that perspective.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
My opinion hasn't changed. I just don't think it's that unreasonable for me to take an extra little bit of time to look at it, considering the fact that nothing that was brought up tonight was included in the packet, so it would have been impossible for me to have considered it ahead of time.
And I would agree. I don't think there's any law that requires that we have to hurry. So at least I haven't seen one worded that way, so. If that is the direction you'd like to go, we'll go ahead and make a motion to that. And
well, like I said, if other people feel like they can move forward tonight, you know, by all means. I'm not the end-all, be-all, so it depending on what other folks want to do.
How does everybody else feel about it?
I say table it.
Sure. Yes, Bill.
Mr. Mayor, with your permission, members of council, I think in this instance you can do as you've done before, just continue the hearing to a time certain for the receipt of additional information as council requests, and you'll be just fine.
Okay.
Even though I fully understand it may not be required for an application because it's a question that's come up tonight, Troy, can you provide any documentation that you would have that shows we did in fact provide, or the applicant did in fact provide, the traffic mitigation study or the traffic study to ITD? Or that we have since communicated with them and said, hey, you got the study, do you have any comments? And it was silence. Just anything we have that would... Okay. I'm not saying provide them right now. I'm just saying before the next meeting. Okay. They could be included in the packet, or we can get them ahead of time, whatever.
Mm-hmm. So just for clarification, council is looking for any communications between staff, applicant, ITD, that they have received the traffic impact study. It's under consideration.
Proof that they got it, yes. And then if there is any additional communication where we're like, so did you have any comments? Did you have any comments? And we're not getting anything back from them. You know, I mean, obviously the absence of a response cannot be necessarily documented other than by you making a note of such. But well, just even one inquiry to them where we said, it's our understanding you got the study on such and such date or around such and such time or whatever. Well, we recessed for quite a long time, so. Okay, apologies. Sorry, packet's too long. I move we table the public hearing in consideration to approve case number 1805S until the November 20th meeting, at which time we will reopen the public hearing to receive additional testimony and information.
Second.
Motion is made and second, basically to continue the hearing for the November 20th meeting. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And that motion carries. item C, consideration to approve advertisement for a request for qualifications, RFQ, on the city website, Bob Bachman, Public Works Director.
Mayor and Council, for the record, Bob Bachman, City of Kuna. Just wanted to kind of touch base with you guys real quick. I shouldn't be too long. Carly actually put this memo together, wasn't able to come and present it tonight. So basically what this is we're requesting to do an energy audit of all of our buildings, all of our equipment, our pump houses, and just find deficiencies and see if we can come up with a good project to ultimately save the city of Kuna some money and energy usage. To do the RFQ will not cost us any money. Basically, we will be requesting people to come out and give us a proposal, and then at that time, we will get a proposal from them, and then we'll bring it back to you guys for approval, so you'll ultimately get the decision to approve or not. This is just basically one step forward in trying to tighten up our energy usage and so on. So I'll stand for any questions.
Okay, questions for Bob?
I thought that was your job.
Yes.
Is that a question?
Did we buy some equipment or something for you or your department to do allocation of review of building apparatus? And
Sense as heat escape and that kind of thing?
Yeah.
That one? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Councilman Cardoza, we bought a thermal imaging camera, which we use to detect heat loss, or heat loss, basically. And that's kind of one step in tightening up building envelopes. This looks into a lot deeper. It looks into pumps. It looks into electrical panels. Very thorough investigation, if you will, for energy consumption. And what it does is it'll give us tools so we can look out 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, and put projects in front of you guys during budget season. And in that project, we should be able to tell you an estimate of how much energy we expect that to save, how much it'll cost, and what the ROI on it is.
Is that done by private contractors or public utilities?
The study will be done by a private contractor consultant.
Okay.
Okay. Further questions for Bob? We appreciate that. I'm really excited to see what we can save energy wise. You've already made great strides in that direction, and the more we can do there, the better, of course. But
Do we need an official motion to approve, or do we just say go forth and do it?
If there's not a fee, I don't think we have to approve it, do we?
I just don't know. I'm unclear what the designation action item means.
Are we going to...
It came through to us as a... So when it was submitted to the clerk's office, it was for you to approve that they could begin this project with the advertisement, so that it was a consideration to approve.
Are we asking, though, to get through the whole thing so that we will be expending funds?
No.
No, at this point, I'm just asking for the blessing of council to move forward with an RFQ.
I move we bless Bob.
What about you?
And I would like to also just make sure Carly gets the credit for this. She's the one that's been putting all the work into this for the last year, and she's really done a really good job on it. So
I move we bless Bob and Carly.
I'll second that bless you.
All right,
thanks.
Thank you,
please
Bob.
Proceed, in case that wasn't clear on the record.
Mayor, before Bobby gets up there, can we take a restroom break, please?
Make it quick.
I'm
sure.
Hurry.
Yeah.
Ready break.
We'll take a 5-minute recess. You stayed up late watching election results.
I actually went to bed way earlier than
did you?
Than I, you know, I could have stayed up later. No, I'm just in the middle of like this massive arbitration that is potentially like if we lose it's like up to maybe around $1 million.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Oh, a supermajority?
They needed a 6.7, but they got 6.
Yeah, because I saw like so many, like, oh, they passed it.
But they didn't. But they didn't try. Those guys
they
did not go.
They did not promote it, and that's exactly what I was saying. They didn't promote it enough for people to understand that it was okay to implement a permit by the city that's going to exist. That was key.
Yeah, I looked at all the news coverage like this morning, and it was like, oh, yeah.
Man, you guys got to work. When we wanted that new station built, there was 15 of us out every night for a week canvassing the city, telling everybody why we needed a station.
Yeah.
I got a sign in my yard. It was like, take it down, and I was dragging my feet until election day. And I was like, okay, I'll take it down. Yeah, that was frustrating. News articles reported it passed.
Right, that's why I looked at, I tried to read everything
before. They had an afternoon update.
Yeah, because I noticed like CWI was like 54% yes, but I was like, oh, but they were like, oh, it failed, and I was like, oh, okay.
I was writing data like as a firefighter out here. I'm like, so are you as confused as I am? Have you heard? Is it failed or passed? It's like worse than your scratch card. That's why I would say that. I should have a majority. That's what I thought. So, yeah.
There's so many, you know what, did you see all the people in QMS now who were like saying, you know, like,
say no to everything. They need to learn how to live within their budgets.
And it's just like they've never looked at anybody's budget
anybody about it. It's just like, this will be the way that the legislature starts giving them more money, and it's like, wait, are you kidding me?
Those are the people that have lived here for 2 years.
Yeah.
And don't understand. They're living on pretty much the same as they were 2 years.
And it's also the people who think taxation is theft, which I'm just like, you know, it's been around since the founding of the country. If you really hate it that much, I don't think you're going to change it. Maybe find another country or somewhere that thinks taxation is theft.
Right.
Like, it's just, it's so absurd to me. It's so fucking absurd.
It's beyond irritating to me. And you can tell that Joe was right on board with the fact that Kim is the type of community that has to be.
I spun around in this chair enough that I put the bad wheel to the side and about fell over.
Yeah, people don't even realize
there.
That even though we take the 3% overall,
about
leaning
back
too. Like, taxes have been going down.
You followed me enough to understand I was part of that early.
Should I get up and throw it like they do?
I was going to Skype in. Before executive session, these texts, these letters are the types of things I used to be like, are you kidding me?
I never used it. It's easier for me
like
to
nobody
navigate.
Enjoys paying taxes,
you know?
But it's like, that's why I also don't get for how huge
I like that one that you had. That's
we're over like over a third of Cuba is under 18.
Oh,
and
okay.
We still
that would be good for
no
this.
On school level. Yeah. It's like, I don't have kids.
Well, it's nice. You go through and turn
yourself.
Yeah.
I vote yes on that every fucking time.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that would be good.
What is a community without education? Like, it's just so crazy. And
but I like the speed of this.
Like,
no.
And it's like,
I do like the speed of this because I can navigate multiple pages so fast and be looking up like that 624 key shit. When he spotted that off, I was like,
"Well, and so I was on board with that
back.
The first time.
I mean, that's
like,
really good
have
fast, but I'm just so used to
it." When I started on council, we had quarterly joint meetings with the school district. And those were catered. They were food provided. It was like Subway. But still, I was like, why are taxpayers paying for us to eat dinner? We know when the meeting is. We meet before, we meet after. And so, like, that was stuff where I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, yeah, there's no reason. And that's why, like, I was totally grinchy. People hated me for the first couple of years on council because I was totally the one that was like, we're not paying for staff appreciation parties. We're not paying for food for anything. Like, oh, and cool thing for my perspective is also federal government where, like, you're not allowed to pay for food for employees ever, 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 ever. With very limited exceptions. But so they cut that stuff out. But like for the first levy that I was
I can.
They ended up cutting all
my
that
wife
stuff
ate
from the budget
me, so
prior
we
to
could
going
have
for a levy.
A pizza or
and
somebody
so
some
I mean,
over.
I like I do feel like they maybe it's not perfect, but they certainly have acknowledged that, okay, yeah. I mean somebody is looking at it and making changes.
Good. It's all right. At
least they're looking. Well, and the other thing that I think is like when you look at what is it, 94% of school districts in the state have to go for funding. That's a problem with school funding at a legislature level. Yeah, and so what I mean is we the cities and like local school districts don't have the ability to change that. People have to contact the legislature.
It'll start popping up.
So, but if you already don't want the levy, you're not going to want them to start spending more money on schools and therefore increasing their taxes either. So it's like, anyway. And we're back.
Okay, if we're ready to fire up again.
I just want to go, yep, looks good. I already read it.
Approved. All right, item 7D, consideration to approve resolution number 89-2018, Bobby Withrow, Parks Director.
Mayor, Council, for the record, Bobby Withrow, CUNA Parks Director. Coming before you to do a joint powers cooperative repair and maintenance service agreement with CUNA Fire Department. As you guys know, we like to help out the other government entities, whether it's police, fire, or the school, when we can. This would make everything more official with helping them out. Throughout the years, if they didn't get a chance to mow their grass, we'd stop by and help them out. We're usually just a phone call away to help them out. One of the
things I like to touch on with it is with our equipment, it takes us less than 20 minutes and we're in and out. And it's on the way to the park, so we're not making a trip just to go there. And as far as the sprinklers and spraying and stuff, it's very minimal on how long we'd be there. So it's usually in and out. And like I said, my staff's usually on the way to other places, and they can just swim right on in. I will say that Mr. Gigray did come up with the agreement. Did I say it wrong?
No.
Gigray. Yeah.
Okay. I've been working on that. Did put this together for the CUNA Fire Department for me to present to you. So CUNA Fire is on board, of course, and Mr. Gigray will be representing both of us. So I wanted to put that out there so everybody knows. Other than that, I'm open for questions, comments, concerns.
Yeah, so I guess the gist of the thing is that we'll be going by and mowing the lawn, and we'll go fertilize once, a couple times a year, whatever it takes, and that sort of thing. Is there anything beyond that?
I think the big gist of it is we're not doing it for free.
No.
That we're getting, compensated for costs and stuff.
Yep, and that does include some snow removal, too.
Oh, that's right.
Yep.
Sounds reasonable to me.
Yeah, I think that's what we usually try to strive for is being cooperative with all the other entities.
Well, and as busy as the fire department is anymore, it used to take me an hour and a half just to mow, let alone weed eat and whatever, and those guys whip in and 20 minutes are done and gone. It's like,
Rich, did you have something to say?
You know, being that it's a separate tax entity, I think if we open this door, we'll be doing the city library, we'll be doing the school district. There are individuals out there that do this for a living. I just have a problem with opening that door to everybody else that would ask us to cut their lawn when there is private individuals that do this. I don't know. It's just that if we're going to start doing other entities that are self-supported by taxes, we may end up having to hire more people just to maintain other entities that have income that they should be hiring outside service, I believe. So, sorry, Bob, but that's just the way I feel.
In my opinion, I guess I would say that if it got to that point where it was that burdensome, we would probably stop doing it. I think we're talking a 20-minute thing, and it's not going to be all that big of a deal. For me, I'm okay with it. But certainly, if it got to the point, like you're saying, where it really was burdensome and we had to hire more people, I wouldn't want to.
Where do we stop if we start doing it for another tax entity? Where do we stop when the request comes in?
So. As somebody who frequently cites, this as a concern, I can absolutely appreciate it. I do think there are potentially facets of this specific situation that make it unique, maybe. The fact that, as it's written up here, we're already driving right past it. It's not like we're making a special trip or anything like that. I think the duration of time it takes, I feel like that should keep it fairly limited so that we're not talking about, mowing the football field or, getting anything that's, quite huge or out of our way. But I also think that this gives us the flexibility that, we would be able to stop doing this at any point should it become unduly burdensome. And I don't necessarily, I feel like there's enough unique parts of this that it doesn't mean because we said yes to this, we are required to say yes to everything else.
Again, I just feel like we're imposing onto the private sector what they should be doing for tax entities, not us. So,
Yeah, I guess the last thing I'll say about it is I in some ways I feel like this is a perhaps appropriate use of our time and services because it's so minimal and because it's another taxing entity, and for them to go out and get this at a private rate would certainly like vastly exceed. I mean, we're charging them under $1,200 for an entire year of grass cutting and some snow removal, and I just, I know that like my subdivision, it's like close to $10,000, and I know that it's a greater, you know, piece of land, but yeah, I just think overall we're doing the taxpayers a solid by doing it. But anybody else have comments?
So how long have we been doing that as a city, just roughly?
Just half of this year, okay. Mowing as far as that wise. We usually try to help them with snow removal in the wintertime because they do have quite a large parking lot, and it is one of the last things we do. But we do try to help them out as much as we can because we have the equipment available.
So, yeah, because I guess my take on that is this isn't implementing anything really new for you guys. Mm-hmm. It's just publicizing that we're already doing it. And so if it does become a problem, like Brianna said, there's nothing stopping us from just finally cutting the cord and saying we're done. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't see a problem with just putting the finances down to it just based on the fact.
And I think, like Brianna said, we all work for the same taxpayers. So, Bob, yes.
I just wanted to point out one other case where they kind of do the same thing for us. They actually perform all the city's flow tests for us. So
the fire district?
Yeah, the fire district does. So it's just another example of just kind of shaking each other's hands and helping one another out. But anytime a commercial building or something like that comes in, they always go out and do the fire flow tests for us, which because we're not really equipped to do that. So just an example to share with you.
Okay. All right. Anything further?
Nope.
Greg, did you want to make a motion?
Yeah. I move we approve.
Yeah, sure. If I'm on the right one here, hang on. Make sure I'm
7D.
7D. Make a motion we approve resolution number R89-2018.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve resolution number R89-2018. is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Nay.
And that motion carries. Item E, financial update. Jared Empey, city treasurer. Jared, thank you.
Thank you. City Council, Mr. Mayor, city treasurer, Jared Empey. Just want to go over some initial results from our prior fiscal year. Obviously, these results are not final and are subject to change still, but they should give you an initial snapshot of kind of where the city sits. Probably the easiest one to kind of get a basic snapshot of each fund is the first worksheet that I provided called the Finance Worksheet. It has it by fund. I want to look in the actual year-to-date column. And so the first one is the general fund. The general fund was positive for prior fiscal year. Here it shows on a cash basis about $400,000 positive. That's a good sign. I expect it to come in a little less than that, but when things are said and done. But that's the preliminary mark. The grant funds there, one bright shining star in this is the latecomers fee fund. That's a really healthy fund right now. The water fund looks good as well on a cash basis. The sewer fund as well, PI looks good. Solid waste is a good cost reimbursement fund health-wise. I would like to make one mention, though, that although these, especially the enterprise funds, are running cash positive, I would like to say that one item that is something that one should consider is that there were many capital improvement projects that were not in, were not completed last fiscal year that are carrying over to next fiscal year. So if you add those in as if they had been completed, that's something that needs to be considered as well. For instance, the water fund had $1.6 million in projects that were not completed. Sewer fund had $1.8 million in projects that were not completed. And the irrigation fund had about 373 that were not completed. So if you make those adjustments as if they had been completed, that should be taken into consideration as well. And then I provided by account how things shook out with the budget. Our revenue looked good as compared with our projections in both our governmental and our enterprise funds. And then finally, our cash. We had a really good change in cash for the year as compared with last year. As of September 30th, 2018, our cash was approximately $19 million. $19.5 million. Just for comparison's sake, last year at that same time, it was about $14 million, so our cash went up by about $5.5 million. So cash-wise, we're looking pretty solid there. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer that.
And so, again, probably some of that increase is because we didn't finish some projects in that.
Exactly.
Have you seen any, so the state liquor distribution, part of that is being absorbed with our agreement to use that for court funding projects that just came up last year, and I don't know exactly when that starts.
Okay.
But I think that's one reason that we didn't increase that budget from last year. That's what Association of Idaho Cities recommended, was not to increase that. So I didn't know if you were aware of that. And I hadn't thought of it until just now. But
Yeah, I was aware of that.
Okay. So that was something legislatively that happened to help the counties pay for courthouse magistrate services and that type of thing. So that actually settled the lawsuit. So that was a good thing.
All right. Thank you.
Questions for Jared? And I would like to say I'm very impressed with Jared. I'm real happy with our decision to bring him in, because he's really, really stepped up. And as far as I know, we haven't been able to stump him yet with anything. So
I'm sure you could find something.
That in and of itself is kind of impressive.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks,
Thank
Jared.
You.
Thanks,
appreciate
Jared.
It. Uh, 8A, consideration to approve ordinance number 2018-38, an ordinance of the City Council of CUNA, Idaho, amending section 3 of chapter 6 of title 1 of the CUNA City Code, making a technical correction of the Idaho Code citation to the open meeting law, and directing the city clerk and providing an effective date.
Yeah, so just looks like we're citing to the wrong section, which I'm glad our new council caught. I move we waive three readings of ordinance 2018-38.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings of ordinance number 2018-38. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve ordinance 2018-38.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve ordinance number 2018-38. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
I move we approve summary publication of ordinance
2018-38. Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve a summary publication of 2018-38. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Item B, consideration to approve ordinance number 2018-39, a municipal rezone ordinance of the City Council of the City of CUNA, Idaho, making certain findings and rezoning certain real property owned by Lock and Roll Self Storage LLC, situated within the corporate limits of the City of Cuna, Ada County, Idaho, to wit, parcel number S141933300, from a agricultural zoning district to C2 area commercial zoning district, and amending the zoning map and directing the city engineer and the city clerk and providing an effective date.
So I note that Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing 2 years ago and approved the rezone, and then we approved the rezone in January 2017. Do we know why it took so long to get to us in an ordinance? We're like 2 months shy of a year, or 2 years since we approved the rezone.
I believe this one slipped through the cracks.
Okay.
That's what I recall, is that we just somehow it didn't get done and we need to clean it up.
Considering that we already approved the rezone in January 2017, I move we waive three readings of Ordinance 2018-39.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings of Ordinance Number 2018-39. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve Ordinance 2018-39.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve Ordinance Number 2018-39. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Councilmember President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Move we approve summary publication of Ordinance 2018-39.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve a summary of publication of Ordinance Number 2018-39. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And that motion carries. Is there any mayor and council announcements that anybody wants to?
No.
Everybody was all excited about the elections and everything last night.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't look at overall city numbers, but it took me over an hour to vote. I've never had to wait in line like that out in Cuna.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, although
that was kind of cool to see. But
there was a lot of people voted last night. That was good. Good turnout. All right, so then the only other thing is we need an executive session.
I move we adjourn to executive session pursuant to Idaho Code 74206-1F to communicate with legal counsel for the public agency to discuss the legal ramifications of and legal options for pending litigation or controversies not yet being litigated but imminently likely to be litigated.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded.
To do that.
Who do we want to be in this? Obviously, Bill.
Probably just Paul and I.
And Bob and Paul. Okay. So the motion is made and seconded, and we include those three. And
we brought the paper.
Who is also going to be secretary? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, guys. What day is it? Oh, yeah.